Good morning and welcome everyone to the January 13th, 2022 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. If you will all unmute, I would ask Madam Chairman to please call the roll.
Commissioner Villacana?
Here.
Commissioner Moltari?
Here.
Commissioner Simpson-Spearman?
Here.
Commissioner Henry?
Here.
And Chairman Campbell?
Here. Will you please join me in the flag salute at this time? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good morning, everybody. The County Planning Commissioners, planning staff, and members of the public wishing to provide live public comment are participating in this meeting using Zoom. Alternate methods for public participation can be found attached to the agenda, as well as a link to a Zoom user guide for public participation. The public may watch or listen to the meeting live online at www.slocounty.ca.gov. If you are a member of the public wishing to provide live public comment and have joined us by website or smartphone application, when I call for public comment on a specific item, please do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen. If you are joining us by phone, please press the *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, the clerk will unmute your connection, announce your name for the last three digits of your phone number if you are calling in, and let you know that you are live online to make your comments. You will be timed for the usual 3 minutes as usual. If you are streaming the meeting through Channel 21 or the county website and wish to provide live public comment through Zoom, please log in or call in early, as there is an approximate 60-second delay between the meeting and the live stream. Please remember to turn down your broadcast volume when speaking during public comment to reduce interference and back and feedback noise. I will now open the meeting to public comment for those items that do not appear on today's agenda for discussion. Staff, do you have anybody waiting with that?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chair Campbell. No pre-recorded messages were received for today's meeting. However, at this time, if there is any member of the public that wishes to speak during general public comment, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 at this time. And we do have a request from a caller, Debbie Bridgman. I'm going to go ahead and ask to unmute your mic and you will receive a notification. From Zoom, your line has been unmuted and your comments are limited to 3 minutes. Thank you. And Debbie, your line has been unmuted. And then if you also have your device muted, you will also have to unmute that device.
Good morning. My name is Debbie Bridgman. And the reason I'm calling in or talking to you is because I have some concerns. I have property that is across the street from this location. The address 5145.
Ms. Bridgman, I apologize for the interruption. Are you speaking in related to one of the hearing items that is on the agenda for today?
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. It sounds like you are speaking in related to one of the hearing items, and the chair will call for public comment. This is general public comment for items not on the agenda. And it looks like you've muted your mic.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Chair Campbell, no additional requests to speak have been received.
All right, then I will close public comment. And the next item on the agenda would be public comment period. Isandro Fowler, please. Your turn.
Good morning and happy new year, Chair Campbell and commissioners. It's very great to see you and you're all in good health, it looks like, so that's wonderful. I'm Alexandria Fowler. I'm representing the Planning and Building Department. And for your staff updates, we will start off with recent actions by the Board of Supervisors that pertain to your commission's purview. On December 14th, the Board of Supervisors adopted an ordinance amending Chapter 2.60 of the County Code to change supervisorial district boundaries. We are still a staff learning more about what that means, and we will communicate that to you if any of you will be changing district representation or anything like that. So we'll keep you posted with information. On January 11th, the Board of Supervisors adopted a resolution authorizing the board to hold a teleconference public meeting, which they did do on Tuesday, pursuant to AB 361, and received an update and recommendations for action regarding COVID-19 within the county. And I'll talk more about that item when we get to your agenda item regarding whether or not your commission would like to continue holding meetings via teleconference. On January 25th, the Board of Supervisors will be revisiting the Planning and Building Department Priorities Report that was originally presented to them on November 16th. The department at that time, on the 25th, will present the board with a scope of work for all of the priority items that the board directed, timeframes, and resource allocations requested to address the 10 priority items. And those 10 items are implementation of the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan, a local ordinance to implement SB 9, which is the Home Act. And SB 9 is a new state law which requires currently, which allows currently zoned single family residences to be subdivided into two parcels or lots. This act also permits duplex residents, which means that you can convert or construct two units on each of those lots. SB 9 also states that local municipalities must approve lot splits and duplex construction or the combination of thereof ministerially, which means that these requests, which typically right now go through a public noticing process and public hearing, would no longer have that requirement. The third item on the priorities list is implementation of the Paso Basin Planting Ordinance, if that is approved by the board. Then there is the cannabis ordinance update with starting a five-year time frame at operations and allowing Type 11 permits, which are distribution in agriculturally designated areas. The fifth item is craft distillery ordinance. Then there is an urban small wineries ordinance. There is adding guest ranch to the Dude Ranch ordinance section for consistency with rural recreation and camping land use definitions. There is a rural camping ordinance to allow for small private campgrounds. There is preparation of CAC, so our Community Advisory Committee guidelines outlining their roles and their responsibilities. And there is preparing a programmatic EIR for the cannabis ordinance. So it will just be a very easy, light 2022 for staff. And all of those items, when we talk about, I'll give a little bit more information about your workshop too that's coming up. We'll dig deeper into all of those items for you so that you have a better breadth and understanding of what they are encompassing. There are no recent appeals to talk about. Moving forward into your next meetings, your January 27th meeting is going to be canceled because there's no items tentatively scheduled. When we last met, we talked about possibly holding the workshop at that meeting, but I'm going to request that we move it into the first February meeting just because there's quite a bit of information that I want to get to you guys for your consideration. And on your February 10th meeting, there's only one item scheduled, so we'll have the bulk of that day to get into the workshop. That one item that's scheduled is a development plan and coastal development permit for indoor cannabis cultivation facility and associated nursery, processing, transport within an existing 19,000 square foot building. This application also includes a request for modification of the location standard to reduce it from 1,000 foot to from sensitive receptors, and the sensitive receptor in this case is a passive recreational park, down to 577 feet. There's also a modification for the fencing standard to waive the requirement for fully enclosing the cannabis activities within a fence area because it's within an existing building. So their request is that the building be considered, in essence, the fencing. And this particular project is located at 1291 Mesa View Drive in Suite C, and it's in the community of Calendar Garrett. And then for your Planning Commission workshop, what we'll be doing that day on the 10th is we will start reviewing processes and procedures to ensure consistency with processing applications that come before your body. We'll review ordinances for improvements that could be forwarded to the Board of Supervisors for consideration with the hope of reducing appeals or, you know, inconsistencies in actions that your body takes. We'll talk about protocol for the inclusion of supporting documents such as geological and biological reports as a standard into the staff report packets that go to you. We will also talk about Commissioner Simpson Spearman sent me a great list of some additional topics that she wanted to cover with the commission. You should have all received that, but I'll run through those generally. And if there's other ones that you want to be covered, please pass that information along to me. But the topics that we have right now are we will provide you with the mission statement for the Planning and Building Department, the department priorities. So I hit on some of those, but we'll go into deep depth on those ones. We will talk about any direction from the supervisors pertaining to planning and building that aren't included in those priorities or were previous priorities that are still carrying over. We will talk about any new state and federal laws that pertain to planning and building, such as SB9, and there's some other ones. And we'll give you clarification on all of those. We'll talk about any ordinances that have come up in discussions previously that your commission has, you know, some issues with, or there'll be nice to have some clarification on. We'll talk about the county's housing goals. We'll provide you with the definition of affordable housing and any state laws that are applicable to affordable housing, such as the SB9. We will also talk about staffing for Planning and Building Department. So we'll talk about the impacts of the priorities report and what our general staffing is that we have on the current planning side and the environmental review side. And we will talk about the workflow process that we have. So basically, we'll run you from start to finish of when an application comes in, how we process that before it gets to you. All of this requested information, I'm going to compile it into essentially a staff report that's going to go to you. So you'll have lots of attachments. But because of that, my objective is if you have any additional items that you would like for me to package up for your commission's consideration, if you could provide that to me by the 21st, which is next Friday. That way, what I want to do is send you guys out your packet by January 28th. So that will give you a couple of weeks before our meeting to digest that information at your own time, because it will be quite a bit. And just so that you know, because we do have quite a bit of things to cover, and I think we're going to have some really great conversations and discussions, we do have time available on the 24th as well to carry over the workshop should we need to do so. So then that way your conversation will be consistent. We won't have a big gap in that discussion. And then that leads me into your meeting for February 24th. You only have one item that's scheduled for that agenda, which is why it's perfect for the workshop continuation if necessary. And that item is a development plan and conditional use permit for the phased development of 10 overnight accommodations and limited support facilities for the Avila Beach Golf Resort. This includes conversion of the existing barn into a public assembly space. And that property is located at 6450 Anna Bay Road and 3000 Avila Beach Drive in the community of Avila Beach. And this concludes staff's update. I see Commissioner Moltari has his hand up, so I'm ready.
Well, that sounds pretty easy. I was just wondering if you could add to the workshop agenda. Maybe this comes under the SOPs and consistency or whatever, but if we could start with a little discussion about the perspective of a planning commissioner for staff, you know, and what's it like to be a planning commissioner and what kinds of stuff makes our job easier, you know, okay. You know, and I think that will lead into a lot of the other things that you've put on there. Thank you. That sounds very comprehensive. And thanks to Commissioner Simpson Spearman for providing that excellent list of things for the agenda.
Mr. Henry, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Is Andrea, I'm not sure if you included, I sent you an email on the 5th of January that contained a number of topics.
No, I did not catch that one. So I will go back and look for that one. And if I don't have it, I'll request it again.
Okay, yeah, I was sent on the 5th.
Okay.
You got any further questions? All right, we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is election of chairperson and vice chairperson for 2022. Owing to the fact that we have three rather new members of the Planning Commission that haven't gone through this before, I would, before accepting nominations, ask if you have any thoughts or questions or comments you'd like to make relative to this. Commissioner Matari?
Well, I do, if the newer commissioners... I'd like to speak a little bit to this item. First of all, my first thing to say is to Commissioner Chairman Campbell is once again, thank you for doing such a great job as you've done other times in the past, particularly this time with the virtual meetings and so on made it more difficult and challenging. And as always, you've really done us well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think kind of traditionally the vice chair then moves up into the chair position and so on. But I think my being the vice chair this last session was really because we had three relatively new commissioners. So I would like to encourage the new commissioners to kind of rotate into the chairmanship and vice chairmanship. I was the chair just a few years ago, so I think it would be good if people are willing to start doing these roles. So if there's no other comments about that, I'd like to nominate Commissioner Henry to be the next chair for 2022.
I would like to second that nomination.
It's been moved and seconded to nominate Commissioner Henry for the chairman position. Any further comments or additions? Roll call, please, Ramona.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
Commissioner Villacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Simpson-Spearman?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
And Commissioner Henry?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
That was
all
a bit
yours,
of a,
my friend.
That was a bit of a battlefield promotion there. Wow.
I guess we should have asked, did you want the chair? So.
Well, thank you for that.
Philip, you're it, and you can continue on with the nomination for a vice chair.
I shall. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. And again, our thanks for your steady leadership over the past year. I have some big boots to fill, and I'll be probably asking for a lot of advice, so thank you. So with that, then, let's look to election of our vice chairman for 2022, and I wonder if we have any comments or any anyone would like to make a nomination at this time.
I would love to nominate Christina Simpson Spearman for the vice chair.
I'd second that if a second is required.
It's good support.
I also think Commissioner Spearman would make an excellent vice chair. So thank you for that. I think, is there any discussion on that?
Call for the question.
Madam Chair. Say again?
I'll call for the question.
Very good. Madam Chair, could we have a vote?
Commissioner Villacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Simpson Spearman.
Thank you. And yes.
Commissioner Moltari.
Yes.
And Chairman Henry.
Yes. So congratulations. for that.
Thanks, gentlemen.
You have that same deer in the headlights look that I had. Okay, thank you. That brings to close the election of our officers, or should I say chair and vice chair for this year. Am I right in thinking that we will do the resolution at the end of the meeting?
I think we're supposed to do it now. I'm sorry.
It's agenda size for now.
Yes.
Okay. We have on the agenda a renewal of the authorization to hold remote meetings. Is Andrea, could you give us a reading on where we're at with the COVID?
Yes. So as I mentioned a little bit in my staff update, the Board of Supervisors, they received a update from the CEO and Dr. Bornstein regarding COVID within our county. And because of the findings and the report, they opted to go forward with having telecommuting meetings for themselves. And essentially, what they found was that holding in-person meetings at this time would present imminent risk to the health and or safety of board members, staff, and all attendees at board supervisors' meetings. And so they set forth that in the resolution. They stated that the COVID pandemic is continuing and the California Department of Public Health and Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention cautioned that the Omicron variant of COVID-19 is spreading more easily than the original SARS-CoV-2 virus. The CDC expects that anyone with Omicron infection can spread the virus to others, even if the other people are fully vaccinated and or do not have symptoms, as well as the people who do have Omicron. As the most recent positive case count report within the county, which was last updated on the 11th of January, positive cases are at their highest level since January 2021, and the rate of rise in positive cases exceeds that of any time during the pandemic within the county of San Luis Obispo.
Okay, thank you. So with all that, I think the board is certainly given, they have very clear direction on that. Is there any discussion from the commission on our direction on this?
I guess I just would ask Alexandria that does the resolution that was in our packet, which is significantly worded differently from the board's, make any difference in terms of our action today? You know what I mean? Do we have to mimic their words to bring it more up to date?
No, I think the language that, was that Ramona?
Yes. Ms. Fowler, I have updated the language for the resolution to include the Omicron language and link as per Ben Dorr from County Council's direction to me.
Perfect. So, yes, your original resolution that you had was fairly general. We didn't get into specifics, and so that's perfect that County Council has provided additional information. Even though your resolution that you had was sufficient to continue with meetings telecommuting-wise if you wanted to.
Well, I think, sadly, we're stuck again and unable to meet in person, so I would move resolution 2022-001 as recommended by County Council to continue to hold virtual meetings for at least another 30 days.
Okay, the motion has been made. Do I hear a second?
I'll second that motion.
Thank you, Chairman Campbell. Madam Clerk, call the roll, please.
Commissioner Moultari?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Villicana?
Yes.
Commissioner Simpson Spearman?
Yes.
And Chairman Henry?
Yes. Okay, thank you. The resolution is in place for another 30 days and will become part of our agenda for our meeting, I guess, 30 days from now. And that moves us on to the consent agenda. Is there any discussion or any items that you, any of the commissioners, would like to pull or discuss on the consent agenda? Hearing none, then, I would call for a motion for that consent agenda to be approved.
So moved.
Second.
Very good. Madam Clerk.
Commissioner Villicana?
Yes.
Commissioner Moultari?
Yes.
Commissioner Simpson Spearman?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
And Chairman Henry?
Yes. Okay, very good. So we move on to our first hearing item. And Madam Clerk, would you please call for that item?
Hearing item number 7 is a hearing to consider a request by Cool Properties, LLC, for a development plan coastal development permit. County file number DRC2020-00152, Supervisorial District Number 3, Nicole Ellis, Project Manager. And if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or press *9 if you are joining us by phone. Please do this at this time in order to be ready to be called for at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Ms. Ellis.
And Ms. Ellis, if you could just, before you start your presentation, do any commissioners have any ex parte on this item?
Nothing.
Okay, not hearing any. Go ahead, Ms. Ellis. Thank you.
Oh, wait a sec. I think Christina had her hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you. The screen's gotten small.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just wanted to remind you to do the ex parte, so never mind.
You probably... On this item, don't you need to recuse yourself, Christina?
That's the next one.
No, this is the Cool property.
Oh, then I do. I'm so sorry. Thank you very much.
I'll remind you.
Thank you. So, yes, I need to recuse myself because I'm the neighbor to this property.
Okay, just give me a second here. I think we've gone out of order. I think the first item should have been item number 6, which is the GV4 project, which is a second and third time year.
That
time
was on the consent calendar.
So. Okay. Well, there you go. My first error is the new.
We'll forgive you.
We'll forgive you.
All right. That's one. Okay.
So, Chair Henry, if you don't mind, I'll just go off the video and go to mute, if that's all right.
Yes, I think that's fine. Okay. Unless County Council has anything further, that would be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So any other ex parte on this? Okay, I did visit the property owner on site. And with that, Ms. Ellis, would you please continue?
Okay. Good morning, Chair Henry and members of the commission. My name is Nicole Ellis, project manager with the county. And this morning, I'll be presenting an overview of the proposed project. So before us today is a request by Cool Properties, LLC, for a development plan, coastal development permit, DRC 2020-00152, to allow for the phased development of 2 residences, 1 guest house, and an agricultural barn with site improvements and infrastructure. The project includes a request to modify the front yard setback standard for an agriculture accessory structure, and the applicant is also requesting a variance to allow grading on slopes greater than 30%, and the project includes a dedication offer for a coastal public trail. The project site, shown here in yellow, is located west of U.S. Highway 101 and on the south side of Avila Beach Drive at the intersection with Ontario Road, approximately a quarter mile north of the city of Pismo Beach and 2.5 miles east of the community of Avila Beach in the San Luis Bay Coastal Planning Area in the California Coastal Zone. The project site shown here by the yellow outline is located within the rural lands land use designation. Recreation uses, including the adjacent Avila Valley Barn, are located north of the project site. The U.S. 101 highway is located to the east. An informal public trail in the city of Pismo Beach are located to the south, and residences on larger parcels interspersed with open space are located to the west of the project site. This is an aerial view of the site, and the project site shown in yellow measures approximately 55 acres in site area, and the more focused project development area is shown in the red box. Okay, here you will find various site photos. Images A and B show views looking west towards the entry of the shared driveway and the neighboring driveway extending up to the neighboring main residence. Image C shows the proposed uppermost building site. Image D shows the view looking from the middle of the site and south towards Ontario Ridge, with the collapsed structure shown on the right. Images E and F show additional site context, just from a bit further away. And lastly, image G shows the view of the lower building sites looking north towards Avila Beach Drive. The applicant has provided this existing site plan. The project site has historically been used for rock and gravel quarry activities, ranching, equine center, and residential uses. The project parcel is currently vacant with remnants of an old collapsed farmhouse, which included a residential structure. The collapsed structures will be removed to accommodate placement of the driveway and the lower primary residence. The applicant has provided this proposed site plan showing the phased development of two residences, one guest house, and an agricultural barn, all shown within the red development boundary. Phase one consists of the construction of an agricultural barn measuring approximately 4,000 square feet, with one residence located in the upper story, a new asphalt driveway and infrastructure. The agricultural barn would be located near and oriented parallel to Avila Beach Drive on the lower, flatter portion of the site. And phase one also includes site improvements, including utilities and infrastructure, and grading for the proposed driveway, and creation of two building envelopes for the two future primary residences. The new asphalt driveway will be extended from the existing shared driveway access from Avila Beach Drive, which has been improved as part of the implementation of the neighboring properties development. The shared driveway has been sited and designed to avoid wetland areas and to further reduce impacts to trees and shrubs, as well as to limit the amount of cut and fill slopes. Phase two will consist of the construction of two new single-family residences between 2,500 and 4,500 square feet in size. And prior to occupancy of the third residence, the residential unit in the agricultural barn would be converted to a guest house. The lower residence would be located immediately southwest of the phase one barn, and the upper residence would be located up on the upper building pad site. The water for the project would be supplied by an existing shared well located across Avila Beach Drive on the Avila Barn, Valley Barn property, and wastewater would be disposed on site using a private septic system. The project includes the request to modify the front yard setback standard for an agriculture accessory structure. Modification of the front yard setback standard to provide a reduced setback of 33 feet from 50 feet along the front north property line is justified because specific conditions of the site make the standard setback of 50 feet unnecessary to achieve compatibility with surrounding uses and environment. The barn has been positioned in an area of the property which is relatively level and already disturbed, thereby reducing the amount of grading, and the modified setback will avoid siting the barn higher up on the hill within the Ontario Ridge Sensitive Resource Area, resulting in the potential for greater aesthetic view impacts from the barn structure. And the modified setback is adequate to provide additional, to avoid additional tree impacts in the wetland setback areas. The adjusted agriculture accessory structure placement minimizes impacts which would otherwise be increased by placing the structure further back. Okay, the project is located on an existing parcel within the coastal zone and is partially located within a mapped sensitive resource area, shown here by the green textured overlay, for the woodlands and visual resources known as Ontario Ridge. This area protects the Ontario Ridge, which forms a scenic backdrop for the coastal areas of Aloe Beach and Pismo Beach, as well as for Avila Valley. And any land use permit application within a sensitive resource area shall be approved only where the review authority can make the following required findings. Number one being that the development will not create significant adverse effects on the natural features of the site or vicinity that were the basis for the sensitive resource area designation, and will preserve and protect such features through the site design. Number two being that natural features and topography have been considered in the design and siting of all proposed physical improvements. Number three being that any proposed clearing of topsoil, trees, or other features is the minimum necessary to achieve safe and convenient access and siting of proposed structures and will not create significant adverse effects on the identified sensitive resource. And lastly, the soil and subsoil conditions are suitable for any proposed excavation. Site preparation and drainage improvements have been designed to prevent soil erosion and sedimentation of streams through undue surface runoff. So the project preserves the sensitive resource area as conditioned and mitigated because new development is required to be consistent with applicable design standards, including building height, colors, materials, and lighting, and screen from public view shed where feasible. And structures and site improvements have been clustered in areas which have been already largely cleared and disturbed due to the prior quarry operation, thereby reducing impacts to trees and shrubs, which help provide natural screening by reducing the amount of cut and fill slopes. The project would be largely hidden from surrounding public viewing areas due to intervening topography and natural vegetation. And the project would also implement a landscape plan to screen the new buildings along Avila Beach Drive, and the project preserves many of the trees and native vegetation. The following slides will go into these items in more detail. So new development proposals are also required to include provisions for guaranteeing preservation of the steep wooded slopes of Avila Road extending to Ontario Ridge. Project conditions 25 and 47 require all lands located outside of the development area and the wetland areas within the development area be placed in the open space easement. The site plan shows the location of the development area shown within the red boundary and the open space easement areas shown in green. Additionally, oak trees and manzanitas will be protected within the development area to the maximum extent feasible, inconsistent with the tree protection plan and mitigation measures related to Santa Margarita manzanita and oak protection. The applicant has also agreed to dedicate a minimum 20-foot wide easement on Ontario Ridge as part of the California Coastal Trail, which spans the southern property line, as shown by the yellow dashed line. The Ontario Ridge Trail access improvements would be minimal. It would include, but not be limited to, installation of fencing and a bench and or table, grading, and drainage to the satisfaction of County Parks Department. Condition of approval 26 states that prior to final inspection of the first residence, the applicant shall execute and record a minimum 20-foot wide trail access easement on Ontario Ridge in perpetuity in a form approved by County Council and the County Parks Department. Okay, so due to the parcel's location within the coastal zone and sensitive resource area, the intact native habitats, which are the coast live oak woodland and Santa Margarita manzanita strands, and the potential state jurisdictional wetland areas, are considered environmentally sensitive habitat areas, also known as ESHA, and require protection. So approval of a land use permit for a project within or adjacent to ESHA must satisfy the following two findings. The findings and staff analysis are detailed in the staff report and attached findings and are summarized as follows. Number one being that there will be no significant negative impact on the identified sensitive habitat, and the proposed use will be consistent with the biological continuous of the habitat. Oh, looks like I'm getting a installation alert. Sorry for that. There we go. Okay. Okay, and the second finding being that the proposed use will not significantly disrupt the habitat. The project involves the phased development of two residences, one guest house, and an agricultural barn, which are allowed uses in the rural lands land use category and are low intensity uses with low activity, which will not disrupt the habitat areas. Structures and site improvements have been clustered in areas which have already been largely cleared and disturbed due to the prior quarry operation, thereby resulting in the least impacts to the environmentally sensitive habitat areas. The project proposes one shared driveway, thereby reducing impacts to these areas. Siting of the proposed driveway has been designed to avoid the wetland areas and to further reduce impacts to trees and shrubs and to limit amount of cut and fill. The project again preserves many of the trees and native vegetation, and the project is required to prepare and implement a landscape plan and would require that screening plants cover 75% of the critical elements of the residences, barn, water tanks, and driveway, as seen from Avila Beach Drive, Ontario Ridge, and US 101. Upon maturity or 10 years, whichever occurs first. The Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance also requires all new development to be located a minimum 100 feet from the upland extent of all wetlands, and no development will occur within or adjacent to within 100 feet of the upland extent of the wetland areas. Therefore, the proposed project meets the environmentally sensitive habitat findings as conditioned and mitigated. Okay, moving on to the variance item. So the applicant is requesting a variance to allow grading on slopes greater than 30%. Grading on slopes greater than 30% is proposed to occur along limited segments of the driveway and a portion of the upper building pad. The area of site disturbance totals about 1.5 acres, and of that total area, a limited amount, 0.28 acres, or about 12,000 square feet, or 17% of the total area of site disturbance, involves grading on slopes greater than 30%, shown here by the purple segments in the plan above. You can see those areas here. Okay. The request for a variance must satisfy 5 criteria. Again, these criteria are analyzed in detail in the staff report and findings and are summarized as follows. The variance authorized must not constitute a grant of special privileges inconsistent with the limitations upon other properties in the vicinity in land use category in which it is situated, because development of two residences, one guest house, and the barn are allowed uses in the land use category in uniformly steep slopes throughout the site, and wetland setback areas offer no alternative to development on slopes of less than 30%. Additionally, grading on slopes greater than 30% will occur along limited segments of the driveway and a portion of the upper building pad. The second finding being that there's special circumstances applicable to the property, including size, shape, topography, location, or surroundings. And because of these circumstances, the strict application of this title would deprive the property of privileges enjoyed by other property in the vicinity and in the same land use category. So the site slopes in excess of 30% throughout the site constitutes special circumstances. The third finding being that the variance does not authorize the use that is not otherwise authorized in the land use category. Because the project site is a legally created lot in the rural lands land use category, and the proposed project complies with development standards and all other coastal zone land use ordinance standards beyond the development on slopes of greater than 30%. The fourth being that the variance is consistent with the provisions of the local coastal program because it has been designed in accordance with the San Luis Obispo County General Plan and the coastal zone land use element and other relevant elements of the general plan. And lastly, the granting of such application does not adversely affect the health or safety of persons, is not materially detrimental to the public welfare, and is not injurious to nearby property or improvements because the recommendations from the Engineering Geology Investigation Report and Soils Report will be incorporated into the construction plans and implemented throughout the building inspection process, which evaluate site characteristics and plan for appropriate residential design, engineering, and development of the site. Okay, so at the December 14th, 2020 Avila Valley Advisory Council, also known as AVAC meeting, the council initially approved comments received from the Land Use Committee. Due to the project's revisions occurring since 2020 and the applicant and agent's interest in responding to comments, the project was reconsidered by the Land Use Committee. And at the October 4th, 2021 meeting, the council approved the following final Land Use Committee recommendations, which included cooperation with County Parks for planning of the Ontario Ridge Trail. So regarding the trail, the applicant has agreed to dedicate a minimum 20-foot wide easement on Ontario Ridge as part of the California Coastal Trail. And the project is also conditioned accordingly. The second item being to provide an additional review opportunity by AVAC prior to hearing. In response to AVAC review, a 30-day public notice was provided. And prior to the hearing, which was prior to the public hearing, providing AVAC and the Land Use Committee an opportunity to review and comment on the plans and staff report analysis. Okay, AVAC also requested general design considerations, such as providing an elevation for the front facade of the barn building, providing a floor plan for the residence, a future guest house within the barn, providing a landscape plan for the front of the barn with use of native plantings, which are spaced to appear natural and to screen the barn structure, providing size and height limitations on the future residential structures and accessory structures. And lastly, staff has reviewed these recommendations and believe the items have been appropriately addressed as demonstrated in the revised plans and through project conditions of approval. And the design considerations will be discussed further on the following slides. So in response to comments received from the Avila Valley Land Use Committee, the applicant has provided the following elevations showing the front facade of the barn building along Avila Beach Drive, which reflects the enhanced landscape plan and elevation for the front facade of the barn building, containing trees and shrubs native to the area, which have been spaced to appear natural. The applicant has also provided an enlarged elevation from the west side, showing the slope of the development area of the lot, as well as the building sites. The project is conditioned to provide limits on sizes and heights of future structures. The maximum allowable height is 35 feet from average natural grade, as measured individually for each building site. The height limitation combined with limitations of the building pads, also known as footprints, for the lower and upper residences and the square footage ranges for the two new single family residences and barn provide clear limitations to size and height for the future structure masses. This slide shows the conceptual floor plan, which has been provided for the barn building as part of phase one, which shows the residence along with means of access, room types, and cooking fixtures. This floor plan was also provided in response to comments received from the committee to provide better development context and certainty. Okay, this landscape The applicant has also provided this site and landscape and tree replacement plan. To reduce visibility of the proposed project from surrounding areas, mitigation measure AES-1 would require the project to prepare and implement a landscape plan that would require screening plants cover 75% of the critical elements. Again, those are the residences, barn, water tanks, and driveway, as seen from Avila Beach Drive, Ontario Road, and US 101 upon maturity or 10 years, whichever occurs first. Okay, the landscape palette will provide a mixture of trees and shrubs native to the area, which will be spaced to appear natural, and which provide varying heights, textures, and colors, as shown here. And the applicant has also provided this tree protection plan, The project again preserves many of the trees and native vegetation and would result in the removal of 2 eucalyptus trees on site and impacts to 1 oak tree. The project proposes to replant 4 oak trees on site to mitigate for the impacted oak tree. And oak trees and manzanitas located within the development area will be protected to the maximum extent feasible to further minimize the project's visibility from public view corridors. Okay, so prior to the hearing, a supplemental comment letter was received on January 11th, 2022 from the Avila Valley Advisory Council, which included the following comments. First, that the project should include mitigation measures from the mitigated negative declaration in the conditions of approval. So this item is addressed as all mitigation measures are included in the conditions of approval in Exhibit B. It should be noted that mitigation measures had to be dispersed throughout the conditions based on the timing or sequencing of when they are implemented. So various sub-measures might be located elsewhere, but all measures are included in the conditions. Second, to discuss the rationale or alternatives for the barn front setback modification and consider a reduced size and to clarify future agriculture uses. In response to this item, the applicant intends to keep horses on the property, and the barn structure shows 4 horse stalls. The department has viewed horse keeping as a type of agriculture use, and the applicant can speak more about the vision for the intended future agriculture use. Additionally, the site conditions and constraints support the modification request, and the findings can be made to support the reduced front setback. Third, to address the potential for future accessory structures within the 2 future building envelope areas and whether a condition is necessary. Staff does not believe an additional condition is necessary since accessory structures are incidental, related, and subordinate to the main use of the lot and do not alter or change the character of the main use and are typically of low impact uses and of limited size. There are also existing conditions of approval which require new development be consistent with applicable design standards such as building height, color, materials, and lighting. And that they be screened. Building paths have been clustered, thereby reducing the spread of future accessory structures. Okay, and lastly, to consider providing AVAC the opportunity to review the future plans and design for residences, the Planning Commission can consider the addition of the following language to the end of Condition 1B as follows. A review and comment on final architectural plans will be sought from AVAC or its designated committees prior to approval by the Department of Planning and Building. The mitigated negative declaration was posted to State Clearinghouse and the county webpage for public and agency review comment. No public or agency comment letters were received on the mitigated negative declaration. And prior to the hearing, 2 public comment letters were received expressing support of the project, noting care taken to the siting of structures on previously disturbed areas and ample amount of open space preservation. Okay, staff recommends revisions, some cleanup revisions to attachment to Exhibit B, conditions of approval number 22 and 33. To reflect refined mitigation measures, which were signed and acknowledged by the applicant through the developer's statement. The recommended revisions do not alter the intent of the mitigation measures. GO-2, which is condition 22, is proposed to be revised to account for inadvertent discovery of paleontological resources, as opposed to the assumed presence of these resources. GO-3, condition 33, is proposed to be revised to state if paleontological resources are encountered pursuant to mitigation measure GO-2, and then it also proposes the removal of redundant reference to qualified monitor, which is already addressed in the first paragraph and last sentence of GO-2. the staff is recommending the conditions be revised as shown above and is outlined in the staff memo uploaded to the agenda, which was dated January 10th, 2022. And staff is recommending adoption of the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act and approval of the development plan coastal development permit DRC 2020-00152 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and their revision to conditions 22 and 33 in Exhibit B as reflected in the staff memo dated January 10th, 2022. So that concludes staff's presentation. Planning, Public Works, and Parks staff, as well as the applicant, Monty Cool, and agent team, Pam Ritchie, Jake Minnick, Noah Walters of RRM, as well as the environmental consultant, Brandy Cummings of SWCA, are available to respond to questions the commission and members of the public may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole, for an excellent and comprehensive presentation. Before we move on to the applicant, do commissioners have any questions or clarifications from staff? Okay, not hearing any then. We can move on to the applicant if the applicant has a presentation to make.
Yes, Chair Henry, we have Pam Ritchie with RRM Design, and she has joined the meeting as a panelist.
Very good. You may go ahead.
Good morning, members of the commission. My name is Pam Ritchie, and I'm a planner with RRM Design Group, representing Monty Cool, who's the applicant and property owner for the proposed development plan before you. And the project teams reviewed the staff report and all the attachments and agrees with the recommendation for approval and the findings and conditions as drafted with amendments to conditions 22 and 33. And so we wanted to thank staff for their support and guidance throughout the process and are anxious to move forward with the project. And as the chair noted, staff provided an excellent and very detailed report, and I don't want to be repetitive, but wanted to reiterate a few key takeaways that support the project as laid out and planned. So takeaway number one is that the proposed development footprints occupy only a relatively small portion of the site closest to Avila Beach Drive. And as noted in one of staff's PowerPoint slides, a majority of the 55-acre site will be retained as permanent open space. And this includes the dedication of a future easement for the coastal trail along Ontario Ridge. And second takeaway is that the area where development is proposed has been highly disturbed over time, including a quarry for materials for Highway 101 construction, which appears to date back to the 60s and 70s when it was active. So, and the site's also been used in the past for residential uses, farming, ranching, and an equestrian center. And takeaway number three, the development plan has been very carefully crafted to minimize impacts to on-site resources by respecting wetland setbacks and limiting tree removals. So the last matter I wanted to address was a letter received after a report publication from AVAC. And the project team made a presentation to AVAC last September and later responded to their comments and requests with updates to the plans. So we've appreciated their thoughtful comments in the past, but would like to go on record regarding one of the latest comments that we have a concern with. And our foremost concern is with keeping the footprint of the barn on the site where it is. We feel that maintaining the barn setback at 33 feet is very important for the project and also defensible for the following reasons. First, not allowing this setback modification would create new significant grading impacts and also require tree removals. Two, moving it further up the hill would also make it less functional for its intended uses, including vehicle storage and horse stalls. Three, visually, the building will be very attractive, a high-quality design with wood siding and architectural detailing. So in addition, as was mentioned by staff, there's extensive landscaping proposed along the streetscape and perimeter of the structure to provide screening. And the last point is that this proposed barn is really a very unique hybrid type of structure with multiple uses, including a small residence, horse stalls, and vehicle storage. So under county codes, a residential building or garage at the height proposed could be located on the site with a 25-foot setback. So for all the reasons that I've mentioned, we believe that the modification to the front setback should be supported. And that concludes my comments. The project team is available to answer your questions. So in addition to myself, the project landscape architect, Jake Manick, is here, the civil engineer, Noah Walters. And last but not least, the project applicant, Monty Kuhl, is also available. So we'd like the opportunity at the close of the hearing to address any new questions or issues that are raised. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Rieke. Before we move on to public comment and deliberation, do we have any questions or clarifications from the applicant? Michael, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Pam, for your comments. And Nicole, thank you again for a very comprehensive and detailed analysis. Pam, I just had two questions for you. One is, you said that you were okay with the conditions of approval, including the modifications. Then one of the modifications is that they're AVAC provide comments on the detailed, elevations and floor plans. Is your client okay with that?
Yes, he is. We have discussed it. I think we agreed with the staff report that there's enough design guidance and performance standards between the project conditions and mitigation measures for staff to do their review. But we're willing to afford AVAC to provide comments to staff on the building designs down the road.
Okay.
Initially, we didn't want to submit those details given the fact that they were likely to need modifications in the future. And we feel, again, that the conditions and mitigation measures cover it, but the applicant has agreed to allow it.
My second question, thank you, is I wasn't clear from the site section where the front fence line is relative to the property line. And maybe, Nicole, you could show that site section slide again. Or Pam, maybe you just know. Is it on the property line or is it set back from the property line?
I thought it was on the property line, but we could ask Jake Minnick, he probably knows the answer to it. It is on the property line. I just received
it. So, so we're going to put a 6-foot fence right on the property line.
I believe that's existing there.
It's not solid, though, is it?
Let's see.
Well, we can discuss that. But when I went out and looked at it and drove by a couple of times, I did notice that there's a solid fence there. And maybe I just missed it. I've gone by there so many times.
Yeah, so Jake Minnick, the landscape architect, did the landscaping plan, and he's available to respond to those questions.
Great.
Jake's line has been unmuted.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Jake Minnick with RM Design Group.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for the question, Commissioner. The existing fence is not solid. The intent there is to actually plant vines to create a solid appearance.
Okay. So the materials, the existing fence is to stay, and then you're going to plant materials on the existing fence to improve its function as a screen. Is that, am I understanding that right?
That's correct.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. I just was wondering if we were going to build a new solid fence out of some other material, but I think that explains it very well to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Moultrie. Any further clarification or questions for the either applicant or staff before we move into public comment? Okay, having heard none, Madam Chair, do we have any public members of the public wishing to speak on this item?
Yes, good morning, Chair Henry. No pre-recorded messages were received for this item. However, at this time, if there is any member of the public that wishes to speak during public comment, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 at this time. And Chair Henry, no requests to speak have been received.
Okay, thank you. So I'll close public comment and bring it back to the commissioners for discussion and debate on this item. Feel free to weigh in.
Well, if you like, I can go first. This is a very difficult site. It's similar to the one adjacent that we processed a couple of years ago. I'm not sure who on the commission was with us at that time. And similar conditions of approval have been applied. Similar mitigation measures have been imposed. I think the applicants have done a really commendable job in a sensitive site plan, grading plan, and the design of the barn, frankly, I think is really quite attractive and fits in well with the environment there, context. The applicants are also providing an open space easement over the wetlands and over the vast majority of the site, including the steepest parts and the wooded parts. And they've offered a dedication for the public trail and the ridge. So I think they've really done a commendable job in dealing with a difficult site and with multiple public interests. My only hesitation, well, there was two. One was a solid fence, but that's been clarified that the fence is going to remain. It's just going to have vines growing on it, which I think is a good solution. But the other issue is the, when does it become overkill in terms of the advisory committees getting into, the site design and the elevations and the materials and things like that. Since the applicant is okay with the suggested condition, I'm not going to fuss over that, but I do think some consideration needs to be made. When's the cutoff, in those circumstances? And I think that the reduction in the front yard setback is perfectly legitimate, considering that similar size buildings would be allowed. It's 25-foot line. And it's just really a functional, the function of the building determines the setback rather than the site feature. So I think the 33-foot setback is perfectly adequate with the landscaping plan that's proposed.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Alex, I saw you nodding your head on a couple of the items there.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions I had as I was reading through this is is this a standard thing that we've done in the past where it goes back to an advisory board before actually getting approved? So taking those elevations back, because I was just kind of surprised that we'd have to go back through a second time. And so historically, I just didn't know if that was something that happened, or is this something that's new? And is it something that we're going to carry forward on other projects if we say yes to this one?
Great. Well, Commissioner Campbell, you've obviously seen this before. What is your take on this?
That last comment by Commissioner Villicana kind of struck me well, and I share that concern. Let me back up to the barn. I think the graphic or the picture of that barn of what it will look like in the future is very acceptable to me. But you can't go back and forth and back and forth ad infinitum on these kind of things. So I tend to have the same concern that Alex does.
Very good. I have one or two thoughts. Is there any further comment from any of you before I weigh in on this?
I just noticed that Nicole had her hand up. I don't know if she had some staff perspective on this.
I missed that. Go ahead, Nicole, if you have want to comment, please.
Thank you. Yes, so what I will say is we don't typically have the supplemental conditions for like a final AVAC review on the, you know, final architectural design. And but we have used it sparingly if there is a legitimate land use compatibility concern. What I will say is that as the project is currently conditioned, the project has four very very detailed aesthetic measures, which address colors, textures, lighting, variation, screening, building height. We have our building pad confines. So those measures, when also paired with a final materials palette, which will be required to be presented to our department, and final inspections by our department, I think those do provide certainty, you know, of sufficient design and land use compatibility as currently drafted. So it isn't typical. And, you know, this project did go through an initial review. Some revisions did occur, so it did go back. And then we received the supplemental comments. So I hope that provides a bit of background and context. But, you know, our staff recommendation is, you know, really to include the amendments to the conditions 22 and 33 and to leave it open for the commission to consider the EVAC supplemental inclusion.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Before I come back to that point, just a couple of general points. You know, we've seen over the past year, certainly since I've been on the commission, a number of developments or applications that are sensitive to the surroundings, where the applicants and the owners have made an exceptional effort to preserve the amenity, to improve things, to be in harmony with the natural environment, and offer also these offers of dedication and open space easement. And I think the applicant here and his team have done a very good job there. I mean, you know, the landscape plan and plannings is almost a who's who of California natives, you know, is one example. So I think those are all in favor of this being very sensitive and, you know, keeping in the character of Avila Valley. So that's all good. Coming back to the issue of adding a condition about re-review by AVAC, it's clear that the applicant has worked hard to try to address the concerns. I have a problem with setting a precedent or being seen to set a precedent of inserting an advisory body into the planning, the review, and approval process, even though an advisory body would not be there to provide approval. I think it would be unadvised to give the impression that they're part of the process in terms of the approval, and that their review of something is a condition for going forward. I think that the advisory councils are just that. The commission and the board of supervisors, you know, value their input, and that's part of the outreach for the community. But I think this commission and planning staff have sufficient oversight and view of that process to not allow planning applications to bulldoze through, you know, against some advice or input from the community. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying I am not in favor of including that wording and condition. I don't want to give the appearance that will become part of the process. It's kind of the thin end of a wedge. I don't know how the rest of the commissioners feel about that.
Totally agree.
I agree as well.
My only hesitation with that, fellow commissioners, is that it would be a disservice to the applicant if this kind of after the applicant has agreed to do this, if we were to take it away, if that would trigger some kind of coastal development appeal, which would then put this on a very long process that might take months to rectify. So I agree with you, and I would say that more generically, this should be part of the discussion at our workshop, and I think it was already on the agenda that Exandria put forward, and that maybe in this particular case, since the applicant's agreeable to the condition, that we just leave it. But I'm not going to, I can go either way.
That's a good point, Michael. I mean, I would be very disappointed. It would be almost like throwing your toys out of your playpen if AVAC took a contrary view, having seen the applicant being, you know, very compliant and I think meeting all of the concerns as we've seen in both their staff report and in the applicant's presentation. So do we allow the language to stay out of an abundance of caution? Commissioner Campbell, I value your view on this. You've been around a while.
I agree with what you're saying wholeheartedly. We don't want to develop something that in the future is going to kind of run the show here. But this is in the document already. The applicants seem to agree with it. And I would be in favor of letting it, quote, slip by a little bit on this one. Bringing it up at our other meetings, that's a good point. And in the future, staff can like to look at it from our point of view. But I don't see taking it out on this one might cause more harm than good.
Alex?
Yeah, as long as the applicant is okay with it. I mean, I could let it slide this time, but I just don't want it to set a precedent that it's just going to slide in every time we do a project.
I think we all feel that way after this.
Yeah, I think that's right. So we'll bring that up as we do our workshop and process improvements. So if there's no further comment, I think we're probably ready for a motion.
Well, I'd move then approval of development plan, coastal development permit, DRC 2020-00152, based on the findings included in the staff report, and subject to the conditions and mitigation measures that are included in the staff report as revised, as we've seen today, provided by the staff.
Second your motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Moultrie?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Villacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Simpson-Spearman?
She's recused.
Recused, exactly. And Chairman Henry?
Yes. Okay, the motion passes. Congratulations and good luck with your project. Before we continue, we can get Commissioner Spearman out of jail here if you want to rejoin us. Okay, thank you. And I think we're ready to move on to the next item.
I wonder, Mr. Chairman, if since it's 10:20 and we normally take a break right now, if it would make sense to maybe take a 10-minute break and then before we start what will undoubtedly be a lengthy item.
I think that's a good question. Does everybody want to take a break and come back to, say, 10:30?
Works for me.
Okay, very good. We'll call a recess at this time, please, Madam Clerk, and we will reconvene at 10:30.
Thank you. We will now mute all panelists.
Thank you.
Recording in progress.
Okay. Just wait for Commissioner Campbell. Okay, we're all back from our break, if we're all ready to proceed. Madam Clerk, would you call for the next item, please?
Hearing item number 8 is a hearing to consider a request by Bigfoot Valley LLC for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2018-00234, Supervisorial District Number 5, Eric Hughes, Project Manager. And if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or press star 9 if you are joining us by phone. Please do this at this time in order to be ready to be called at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Mr. Hughes.
And Mr. Hughes, before you start, I'll call for ex parte from the commissioners.
I do have a couple. I did meet with the representative for the applicants and walked the property. Additionally, I did speak to one of the neighbors, Brian Pritt, just to discuss his concerns that were laid out in his letter to the commission.
Okay. Any others?
Mr. Chairman, I went by the site, but I didn't talk with anyone.
And Mr. Chairman, I did a site visit and with the applicant's representative and walk the site as well.
And I too did do a site walk with the applicant's representative. Chair Campbell, you're muted if you're talking. I can't hear you.
I'm looking at that. Yeah, I likewise drove by the site and I'm very familiar with it, having friends in that area.
Okay, thank you. So considerable oversight on this one. Go ahead, Eric, with your presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Henry, and good morning, members of the commission. Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. Before you today, we have the Bigfoot Valley LLC Conditional Use Permit, DRC 2018-00234. So a little bit about the project description. The project site is located at 5145 Calf Canyon Highway, also known as Highway 58. It is a cannabis project that is proposed in phases, and the activities include 1 acre of outdoor cultivation canopy, 3,000 square feet of outdoor ancillary nursery, a 2,403 square foot indoor ancillary processing area that would occur within an existing barn that's on site. Also ancillary transport and additional site improvements such as upgrades and to the driveway and access, revegetation of an as-built road, relocation of some existing solar panels, security fencing and equipment, and a compost area. The project also does propose up to 9 employees. The estimated water demand is 0.99 acre feet per year. And the applicant is also requesting a modification to the fencing standards to allow 8-foot fixed knot deer fencing around the cultivation areas. But just a little bit of background. This applicant was part of the county's abeyance, the temporary abeyance projects. And so they're registered under CCM 2016-00182. I would just like to note that in the staff report, the CCM number that's referenced is actually incorrect. The staff report says it's CCM 2016-00361, when in fact it is, as you see here before you on the screen. The outdoor cultivation activities occurred on this site from 2016 up until June 2020, when the applicant had to cease cultivation. I also would just like to note in the staff report that it says the applicant ceased in January of 2020, when in fact it was June 20 of 2020. And lastly, the applicant, in the staff report, it says the applicant had a 3,000 square foot cultivation area, when in fact it was canopy. So just that distinction of cultivation area versus canopy. So anyways, and then there were a couple code violations back in May 2017. The property owner was cited for unpermitted improvements, which include the grading that went to the cultivation area as part of the advance operations, and also some unpermitted electrical, mechanical, and plumbing associated with the ag exempt barn on site. And then in December of 2018, the applicant had expanded the area that they were cultivating in, and so that resulted in the elevating this project from a minor use permit to a conditional use permit. And since that time, the applicant has been compliant. So here we have a depiction of the vicinity map. You can see the project site outlined there in the red polygon. The site is just northeast of the community of Santa Margarita. Here's a land use category map. The project site is located in the rural lands land use category. It's approximately 88.49 acres. It's actually two parcels. There's a tiny little sliver of a parcel there on the down the top left corner of that blue polygon. So it actually is two parcels, but again, surrounded by other rural lands, land use categories. And as you can see here in this aerial, it is in more of a remote location, surrounded by other, you know, rural residential properties, small farms, and vacant land. Here we have a depiction of the site plan. You can see in the light green polygons, those are the proposed outdoor cultivation areas. Cultivation area number one, part of that is where the applicant cultivated as part of their abeyance. Cultivation occurred in a portion of that area. And then you can see in this kind of dark green polygon, this is where the ancillary nursery will occur within hoop houses. And then this white box here is the existing barn that will be used in phase two as part of the proposed ancillary processing activities. Here's a depiction of the barn floor plan. Again, this is where the processing will occur. So drying, curing, trimming, and those activities. So the cannabis project is consistent with land use ordinance standards for cannabis cultivation activities, including the requirements for setbacks. The outdoor setback over 300 feet from the property lines. The project site is not located in a level of severity 3 basin, and so it's not an area of severe decline. As far as security, again, there is a fencing modification to allow an 8-foot-high fence with deer knot fence. And the sheriff has reviewed their security plan and done preliminary background checks on the applicant and provided a letter with clearance to continue. So a mitigated negative declaration was prepared for this project pursuant to CEQA. Mitigation measures were incorporated into the conditions of approval, which can be found in attachment to Exhibit B of the staff report. So staff did receive some comments. The first set of comments were on the mitigated negative declaration. They were from the Department of Cannabis Control. The comments do not identify any new impacts. And under CEQA section 15073.5, recirculation of the MND was not required. Again, there's no new mitigations. These are really just comments and clarifications. However, we also did receive public comment. Those have been provided as correspondence received. Some of the concerns with that, in general, had to do with odors. Again, the project does meet the setbacks, and the indoor processing facility will use carbon scrubbers And as you know, the projects are conditioned to operate in compliance with the conditions of approval, including nuisance odors being detected off-site. And then so additional comments, safety and traffic, just having to do with fire and also like crime. So again, the security plan is reviewed by the Sheriff's Department, and it's an ongoing process with them. And so, you know, they'll have that, they'll receive final approval and be in communication with the sheriff throughout, you know, the life of the project. As far as traffic, the applicant is required to construct a driveway improvement in Highway 58 in compliance with Caltrans standards. Again, as I said, only up to 9 employees are proposed, and really that's 2 full-time employees and up to 7 seasonal workers, so for a total of 9. And this project will not significantly increase traffic along this roadway. As far as water, the applicant, again, does propose 0.99 acre feet a year. And compared to their Baines grow, they estimated that they used 0.71 acre feet a year. So this is an increase of about 0.28 acre feet a year from, you know, what they initially proposed. I know one of the comments did talk about 1 million gallons per year. I think initially when this project came in, it was a much larger project, and so it was scaled down. So again, the water use is not 1 million gallons a year. It's just under an acre foot. And then the other comments had to do with the applicants, the violations. Again, the cannabis-related violation was corrected. The applicant was in compliance. And as far as the unpermitted improvements, as part of the conditions of approval, the applicant is required to bring those up to code prior to the start of operations. With that, staff recommends adopting mitigated negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA, and requests that the commission approve conditional use permit DRC 2018-00234 for Bigfoot Valley LLC based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Very good. Thank you for that, Eric. Before we move to the applicant, are there any questions or clarifications for staff from the commission? I'm not seeing any. I did notice a disparity about the water usage in others, and Mr. Hughes has sorted that one out. So we'll move on to the applicant. I see Ms. Jones is up there. Good morning, and you move on with your presentation.
Sure. Good morning, Chairman Henry. Congratulations on your promotion. I'll be turning this over to Ian McCarville. He is the project manager at Kirk Consulting for this project. So he'll be providing the presentation this morning. And then Ian, myself, and Eric Clark, the property owner, will be available for any questions your commissioner may have at the conclusion of Ian's presentation. And we would like to reserve a little time at the end after public comment, if there's anything in public comment that that we feel needs to be responded to, we'd like to have the opportunity to do so. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jamie. Go ahead, Ian, with your presentation. And good morning.
And everybody can see the presentation on your screen?
Yes.
Perfect. Well, good morning, Chairman Henry and commissioners. My name is Ian McCarville. I am a land use consultant at Kirk Consulting, and I will be the spokesman for this project today. Identified on this slide is the 88.5-acre project site consisting of 2 legal parcels located at 5145 Cap Canyon Highway east of Santa Margarita. The property is zoned rural land and is surrounded by rural land zoned parcels of similar size. Existing uses on the site consist of an ag-exempt structure and previously a cannabis cultivation operation. The outdoor cannabis cultivation activities occurred on the property annually from 2016 to June 2020 upon the expiration of the temporary abeyance resolution. Here's a vicinity map showing the location of the project site along Highway 58. The project site is approximately 5.8 miles to the east of Santa Margarita and 5.5 miles to the south of the Crescent Village Reserve Line. Here we have the overall site plan. Cannabis activities are proposed at the rear end of the parcel and are screened from off-site views by intervening topography and existing vegetation. Cannabis activities meet all required setbacks. The project is proposed to be implemented in two phases, with phase one consisting of 1 acre of outdoor cultivation canopy and two relatively flat areas, 3,000 square feet of ancillary nursery canopy in a hoop house, a fencing modification to allow fixed knot deer fencing with barbed wire on top, the use of existing water storage tanks for irrigation use, and ancillary transport. The applicant will also process an as-built permit for the existing road to rectify a 2016 code enforcement case for unpermitted grading. The applicant will subsequently process a building permit for a new driveway entrance, which will be designed to Caltrans standards and meet minimum site distance requirements. The existing driveway entrance does not currently meet site distance requirements and will be revegetated to restrict future use. Lastly, phase one of the project will utilize existing solar panels for power needs. In phase two of the proposed project, the existing 2,403 square foot ag barn will be converted to a processing facility, and fire suppression infrastructure and ADA parking will be constructed to support this facility. Additionally, the access road will be improved to Cal Fire standards. Here we have a detailed site plan showing the campus premise area. Outdoor cultivation area number one will support up to 26,648 square feet of canopy, and outdoor cultivation area number two will support will total 21,140 square feet and will support up to 16,912 square feet of canopy. The total outdoor cultivation area will equal 1.25 acres and will support up to 1 acre of canopy. The ancillary nursery hoop house will be located in outdoor cultivation area number one, and all cultivation areas will be set back a minimum of 300 feet from all property lines and 50 feet from on-site drainages. Here we have a viewpoint map, which illustrates where the following photos were taken. This is viewpoint number one, and this photo is looking east from within the project site. As you can see, the project site is very rural, with intervening topography and vegetation separating the cannabis activities from neighboring parcels. This image, which looks south from within the project site, was taken in 2019 when the applicant was cultivating cannabis under the temporary abeyance resolution. You can see the outdoor cultivation and ancillary nursery operation in the back and the existing ag barn towards the front. As mentioned previously, the cannabis activities are situated on the interior of the 88.5 acre parcel at the rear end of the site. Outdoor cultivation activities are located more than 1,029 feet from the nearest offsite residence to the south southwest. Prevailing winds during the outdoor cultivation season generally blow to the north, with the nearest offsite residence to the north being located over 1,110 feet away across Highway 58. Odors from the cannabis operation will be naturally mitigated due to the location of the cannabis activities on site, the 1,000 foot plus buffer from the nearest offsite residence, and through the use of carbon filters on the proposed processing facility. Air dispersal and existing topographic features will also help disperse and mitigate offsite nuisance odors. Additionally, there were no registered odor complaints during the temporary abeyance cannabis operation, and the project is conditioned to operate in a manner that prevents cannabis nuisance odors from being detected offsite. Lastly, this is not a year-round operation, and farming will be seasonal, with only one outdoor crop planted per year. A security plan was pre-approved by the SLO County Sheriff's Office in October 2021. The security plan included secure entrance gates, infrared security cameras, perimeter fencing, and alarms in the processing building. No outdoor lighting is proposed as a part of this project. Additionally, a fencing modification to allow fixed knot deer fencing with barbed wire on top was pre-approved by the SLO County Sheriff's Office in October 2020. The applicant is not proposing any security guards, and cannabis activities will not be visible from off-site views. The project will use between 0.4 to 0.99 acre feet of water per year, which will result in approximately 0.28 increase of water per year when compared to historic water use. The well produces 5.8 gallons per minute, or about 10,000 gallons per day, and the daily water demand averages up to 887 gallons per day. So the well will be able to support the water demand for the proposed project. For comparison, the cannabis operation will use 20% less water than 1 acre of vineyard, which would use 1.25 acre feet of water per year. Lastly, the well production was tested in 2017 and again in 2021, and the pump rates remain consistent between the two testing periods. Daily cannabis operations will require one full-time and one part-time employee working 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., 6 days per week. During the harvest period, up to 7 additional employees will be on site working the same hours of operation. The project will generate up to 4 average daily trips and up to 14 average daily trips during harvest periods. And the project will generate up to 4 additional trips per year for soil and farm supplies. The applicant has revised the project based on community input received throughout the land use permit process, with the most notable revisions occurring after the February 2020 Crescent Advisory Board meeting. Those revisions consisted of the relocation of the outdoor cultivation area in order to meet the 300-foot setback requirement. And the setback modification request was also removed as a result of this relocation. The applicant also removed the indoor cultivation greenhouse, which would have supported up to 22,000 square feet of canopy. The removal of these greenhouses reduced project traffic, water demand, energy demand, and employee count, and changed the operation from year-round to seasonal. Lastly, the driveway entrance was relocated to the east in order to meet site distance requirements. We are requesting that condition of approval 19 and 49 be revised to correctly condition the project to install fixed knot deer fencing with barbed wire on top. A fencing modification was requested and approved by the sheriff to allow this type of fencing. Additionally, as a point of clarification, Mr. Eric Hughes also mentioned this in his presentation, but the staff report incorrectly stated the applicant was required to stop cultivation activities in January 2020 because they were no longer in compliance with the county's abeyance resolution. However, we would like to clarify that the applicant was in compliance with the abeyance resolution and was one of the handful of farms that was allowed to continue operating until the abeyance resolution expired in June 2020. Additionally, the staff report incorrectly stated the applicant was restricted to 3,000 square feet of cultivation area during the temporary abeyance resolution. We would just like to clarify that the applicant was allowed up to 3,000 square feet of canopy, not cultivation area. In conclusion, the proposed project is consistent with the Slo County Cannabis Ordinance. A modification to the fencing and screening standards is requested, and the proposed fencing is supported by the Sheriff's Office. Cannabis activities are located on less than 4.8% of the 88.5-acre property. Cannabis activities are strategically located at the rear end of the site and are not visible from off-site views. Cannabis odors will be naturally mitigated by the distance to off-site residences. And the project is surrounded by sparsely populated parcels, which are separated by intervening topography and vegetation. We'd ultimately like to request that the staff recommendation of approval be adopted by the commission today. Thank you, and we are available for any questions.
Okay, thank you for your presentation, Ian. Before we move on to public comment, do commissioners have any questions for the applicant? Commissioner Spearman, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Ian, just wanted to clarify something with you, if you wouldn't mind. You mentioned odors. I just wanted to go back to that for just a second, okay? Sure. You mentioned that it was the distance that's mitigating the odors. Can you talk to me, and that it would be one crop per year? Mm-hmm. Can you, again, explain to me the flowering time? You mentioned harvest was in October, so is it a pretty limited window where the odor would be available?
That is correct. So the flowering period would be between 6 to 8 weeks, depending on strain. And the harvest would typically occur around the same time each year, which would sometimes vary depending on planting schedule. If it's a rainy season, sometimes plants are planted a little later. So October is typically when the harvest would occur.
Okay, thank you, Ian. And then the one other thing I noticed is on the blue line on the map, in terms of the setback to the blue line, can you educate me there one more time, please?
Sure. So we are required to be set back from the top of bank of all drainages by over 50 feet and from riparian woodlands by 50 feet as well. So we do meet that minimum 50-foot setback.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Christina. Any other questions from the commission before we move on? I do have one, and it's come up, and I have to admit to being slightly embarrassed about being confused about the difference between canopy and cultivation area. I wonder, Eric, or other member of staff, if you could just comment on that as it relates to the allowable areas.
Yes. Chairman Henry Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. So the, you know, as far as what's allowed, the applicant is proposing 1 acre of canopy. Therefore, they're allowed an additional 25% of cultivation area, so up to a maximum of 1.25 acres of area, which includes aisleways and workspaces.
Okay, so just to make sure I understand this, the canopy is the actual footprint of the grow, and then the cultivation area allows access for picking, for maintenance, and all that kind of thing. So it expands by what you said. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, the canopy would basically the you know, leaf margin to leaf margin. So like you said, the grow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's actually permitted is the canopy area, which is the amount of plant.
Correct.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification. Appreciate that. Any other questions before we move on to public comment? Okay. Okay, Ramona, do we have any public comment on this item?
Yes, thank you, Chair Henry. No pre-recorded messages were received for this hearing item. However, if there's any member of the public that wishes to speak on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9. And just a quick reminder that the raise hand feature is non-stationary and you would just have to scroll towards the bottom of the page. We'll begin public comment with Debbie Bridgman. Ms. Bridgman, like before, we'll ask that you unmute your connection, and your comments are limited to 3 minutes.
I'm wanting to speak because I am one of those people that are close by and the one across the street from Highway 58. I can see that grow from where my property is. I can smell that from time to time, and I am concerned about that grow getting bigger and more people coming. They sneak in on Highway 58. They take a deer trail going up in there, and they're going up in there. So they're parked along 58. It's a hazard. I'm concerned about the quality of my property, the air, having to smell the stench from that, my property value. Who wants to buy property next to something that stinks? So I have a lot of concerns. And for the entranceway, there is a huge culvert that goes from one side of 58 to the other, that blue line that you're talking about. That's why they sunk the dozer down in there when they were making that road, and it was buried. It's because water does drain. We haven't had significant water from rains and such, but go back in time, that whole entire thing was running. And so I don't know where they're thinking they're going to put the road in. It's steep mountains right there, Highway 58. So other than where the entrance currently is to 5145, which is a green gate, which the culvert does come out. So I do have a lot of concerns about permitting this, and to award them for past violations by giving them future access to do as they please, I don't feel that that's correct either.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Bridgman.
Thank you.
Okay. Were those the end of your comments?
I just wanted to also let you know that my family's owned that property for more than 40 years. The winds that do blow all come from the south. They blow to the north. There are a lot of houses. They took those pictures up on top of the mountain when you're seeing brush, but down in those gullies is where all the homes are. So it's not as if that's in the middle of nowhere. It's not. There are a lot of homes in there. And the Zoom meeting ID number that you guys gave was not correct this morning, and I had to come down here to the county office to get that corrected. So maybe there's a lot more people that wanted to maybe chime in that couldn't because that wasn't available for them. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Bridgman. The next request to speak is Scott Mann. Mr. Mann, you'll receive a message from Zoom that the host is attempting to unmute your connection and your line has been unmuted and your comments are limited to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Great. Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Henry and commissioners. Yes, my name is Scott Mann, and I'm here today to speak in support of the Bigfoot Valley Project. I want to briefly share with you my experiences with Bigfoot Valley owner and operator Eric Clark. I've had the pleasure of knowing Eric for nearly 15 years now, both personally and professionally. And I can tell you that he's a family man of strong character with an equally strong work ethic. When I first met Eric, he was a well-respected contractor working mostly on residential projects. He took great pride in his construction business then, just as he takes great pride in Bigfoot Valley today. I've also had the opportunity to be a part of this project since the beginning, and I've watched Eric work alongside the county with full transparency to ensure that all requirements and expectations are met. As a business owner, Eric's top priorities have always been to work within compliance of all regulations and to ensure that the job is done right. When it comes to these priorities, Eric will be the first to tell you that there is no compromise. I truly believe it's this integrity and commitment to doing things right that sets Eric apart from others and helped him prove to be both a responsible landowner and successful local business owner when Bigfoot Valley was operating under the temporary abeyance resolution. Simply put, I really can't think of a better business owner and county partner than Eric Clark. And with that, I would ask the commission for your support of the Bigfoot Valley project. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The next request to speak is Brian Pritt. Mr. Pritt, you'll receive a message that the host is requesting to unmute your connection and your line has been unmuted.
Thank you for taking the time to hear this and hear our immediate neighbors that are opposing this project. And I, which opposed this project since 2015, as you guys stated, it was at 2016, but actually there was a illegal pot grow going on all the way back from at least 2015 and before. I've owned the property adjacent to this since 2006, and I've spent a lot of money improving my project through the proper channels, paying my taxes, doing everything properly, where I feel this has been a fraud from the beginning as it's been misrepresented that it was originally a 35-mile project outside of Creston and Santa Margarita. And that was only corrected for the current proposal after I brought that to the attention. I wish I hadn't brought that to anybody's attention, but I feel that it was done purposefully to dissuade people from yourselves as to think that this was originally, you know, as close it is to the county, to residents and such that it is. It's surrounded by at least 8 to 10 homes, you know, within 1,000 to 2,000 feet. As mentioned, the stench is incredible. And just with any marijuana grow, there's all kinds of trespassing that occurs. I've had to build fences on my properties to keep people from trying to come across my property to enter into that property. As for water use, very concerned about that. I've already had to put in a new well since they've started pumping because my original well went dry. So I've already put a $50,000 new well in that it barely gets 4 gallons per minute. So if we're using 4 gallons a minute and they're using 5 gallons a minute, now we're at 10 gallons a minute. And therefore, you know, the water is barely sustainable for the home usage that we have. So, you know, it's not a project that's conducive for our areas. It's based on this permit is based on fraud, in my opinion. It snuck in through people that weren't really paying attention. And that's what's gotten it to where we are today. So I do appreciate the fact that a couple of the commissioners were able to actually talk with me directly, and Dawn for actually coming out and viewing. As stated, this grow is visible from every other property around it. It's a very misleading presentation that this is out in the middle of nowhere, when in fact, even Eric, the planner who just commented, it's in a rural residential area, even though it's not categorized as such, but he even made that slip that it is a rural residential area. So it's not a project that is suitable for the area. And with that, I hopefully respectfully request that you guys deny it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments, Mr. Pritt. The next request to speak is from Scott Mann. Mr. Mann, you'll receive a notification from Zoom that the host is requesting to unmute your connection. Your line has been unmuted and your comments are limited to 3 minutes.
I actually already spoke.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I apologize. The next request to speak is Kelly Coons. Ms. Coons, you'll receive a notification from Zoom that the host is requesting to unmute your connection, and your line has been unmuted. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My family has property across the street, 49 acres. We bought in 1973. The estate currently owns it because my dad just passed away. And I actually have two lots, a 20-acre and a 29-acre. And I believe the property across from 58 from the proposed cannabis farm is my dad's property. I don't know if they have an APN connected to that. I am currently trying to decide if I'm going to, sell the property, keep one of the properties, because there's a beautiful view on the 29-acre property. I was raised on the whole property. And I'm just concerned also about the water usage. And how is that water usage determined? And is that just for the cultivation or for people living on the property as well? Water is a huge concern in that area. I just also feel as a landowner that it would not be a positive addition to that area to continue. That's all I have for now.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Coons. Chair Henry, that concludes the request to speak on this hearing item.
Okay, and thank you, Danielle. I'm sorry I got your name wrong. I wasn't sure who was going to pop up there, so apologize for that.
No worries. So thank you.
With that, I close public comment and bring it back to the commission. So to begin our comments and deliberations, what are your thoughts on this?
I'd be happy to start off if you'd like.
You can start off, Alex. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, my concern, and it's been my concern with a lot of these projects, is it's that the whole idea of the neighborhood compatibility. This one, I would say, checks all the boxes that, it definitely is probably one that would fit the ordinance and should be approved. But it also comes down to, the neighborhood compatibility. And, we just approved a project, the Cool project, where we took, into account pretty heavily the advisory board that was, basically reviewed the project. And, CAB is pretty much said that they do not want this project, they do not want this in their community. And so personally, I'm having a real dilemma saying, if a community doesn't want something, why are we allowing it into that community? And so those are my concerns. It really comes down to the neighbors and, how does it fit into that rural community and affect the neighbors and the community as a whole?
Okay.
Don, you had some comments. Thank you.
Yes, I do. I've got two or three things here. Thanksgiving. I live about, five and a half, six miles from a cannabis grow that, by the way, I don't think ever came before our planning commission, but it's a big one. We had guests coming to Thanksgiving that went by it, and three came at different times in different cars, and they all came in our house and said the same thing. Where's that? We took the vineyard exit, came towards your house, and where's that terrible stench coming from? Three in a row just for Thanksgiving. So I think this is a big, big problem. We, three or four years ago, had at our meetings experts on odor control. The carbon scrubbers work. That's why we insist most of the time that we put these things inside an industrial area, inside a building, because the scrubbers work. But they have not taken care of this odor thing. My wife and I, with a grandson playing football, goes to the Templeton football games, which is about probably 4 miles or so from this grow, and we could smell it in the stands. So I don't care what anybody says. I've been farming out here for 60 years and know pretty much all of the little ins and outs of farming. You're not going to convince me that you're going to stop this odor that comes during the certain times of this grow. I want to go now to ask a question. I have 26 pages here of the Santa Barbara grand jury findings, with all pages being negative. Santa Barbara has a programmatic EIR for the cannabis industry. We have it also, which means we can avoid an environmental impact report, which should be done. Department recognizes the disaster that cannabis grows have created in Carpinteria, Santa Ynez, and Lompoc. Does the planning department recognize the disaster that's been caused in this Santa Barbara County? We're starting it here, folks, just like there, and they are having terrible problems. They got suits all over the place, and it's mostly about the odor. So I can't vote for this or any other until this thing gets under control and has an EIR attached to it.
Thank you, Chairman Campbell.
Bill, you're muted.
Thank you for your comments.
There you go, Phil. Okay.
Campbell. Christina, do you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, to Don's comments, I mean, I see his point of view on that, and I think that's something I would like to learn more in terms of environmental considerations in terms of cannabis, and something I'd like to discuss when we meet in our workshop to become more educated and see how it's been impacted in the county next to us. And I also am struggling, I think, as Alex is, with the role and of the advisory councils. And, you know, what does that mean, and where do they fit into this process, and what is the weight, I guess? But then I also go back to, you know, is this project consistent with land use standards? And with conditions, you know, it is. And so I hear what both Don and Alex are saying, and I respect their point of views. But I have to go back to, you know, what guidance we have on the books now. And were those issues that were addressed, one of them being odor, mitigated to be consistent with the land use standards, which they were. So that's how I'm looking at this project currently, Chair Henry.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Commissioner Spearman, let's see, Michael, I'm not going in turns, but you haven't said much.
Well, thanks. I have, you know, these are, these kinds of issues have come up time and time again on these cannabis projects. I also agree that I don't think that outdoor grows, that the odor can be mitigated in any other way than just distance. And so the question is 1,000 feet enough for the closest house? And in this case, at least, we are clear that there's going to be just one harvest per year. So I think that's an argument in favor of this particular grow. And I would say that if we were to proceed with an approval, that should be part of the conditions of approval and not just assumed. I have several questions beyond the odor one. One is water. We've got conflicting information about water out there. And that's to my mind, that's a huge concern, because if this continued operations or expanded operations impacts the residents nearby, then that probably is a pretty good argument for saying no. And it's hard to tell based on the information that we've gotten, because you have anecdotal information from the neighbors saying that their wells are already impacted. Yet we also have an MND and staff report suggesting that there is enough distance and lack of continuity that this water won't affect theirs. Another problem is that there has been a pretty sounds like, and Eric, maybe you can clarify for me, it seems like there was a pretty significant violation in the past on this property. And one of the reasons that it was promoted to us rather than the hearing officer is because of that. And I'm concerned about on-site security. I guess maybe if Detective Hernandez could speak to this. Is the Sheriff's Department okay with having a grow out there with no on-site residential security?
Good morning, Planning Commission staff. As far as no one living on site, they will be required to have remotely accessed 24/365 camera surveillance system set up on that. And that'll be on the front of the gate, surrounding and within the cultivation area alongside the processing building once they start moving forward with phase two. So there will be active surveillance on the property.
But it's also pretty far away from, you know, from any reasonable response time. Would it be if something actually were to take place? I guess it just strikes me as it's pretty hard to get out to that property, and if somebody were trying to enter it, even if the security cameras, you know, this is not my area of expertise, that's why I'm asking you, were to trigger a response, it seems like it would take a while to get out there to do anything about it.
Justifiably, if there is no one on site, then it would just be property that is taken versus putting anyone at risk or any type of dangerous situation like that. There is a rural resident deputy that lives within probably 15 minutes of that specific location. We can add additional features onto that, such as motion-activated alarms or any type of system to that. Typically, most cultivation sites that we have currently, there isn't anyone currently living on site. It's kind of a two-folded view, whether it's safe or unsafe to have someone living on site 24/7. And if they are to steal the product out there, primarily in this first season, they would just be taking raw plant material versus dried plant material or anything like that.
Okay.
Just to interject on that, you know, I did visit out there on site, and I noticed I don't see any commercial power right now. All the power is being provided by solar, which is fine, battery backup. But also, it was clear to me in the day that I visited, there is no cell coverage out there. So any kind of data connection for camera and video, right now there doesn't appear to be any means to do that. The security plan wasn't included in the presentation package. but presumably that's got to be a precondition that you have a viable and robust data links to be able to do remote site monitoring and viewing of cameras.
Chair, can I interject as well? I think the whole idea that we actually have this security plan and we're running through the concerns of the security plan, we're actually conceding to the neighbors basically concerns that there is a risk of trespass and criminal behavior. And so, and that falls back on the whole idea of neighborhood compatibility. If we're basically saying we're putting something that is dangerous and should have certain security precautions, I would be concerned if I was a neighbor. So I think on that alone, we're basically saying we know there's a problem.
Yeah, well, we do know that there's a potential problem with any of these cannabis grows anywhere. But our county supervisors have said that this is an acceptable allowed use. There's other things that are dangerous that we approve or that we allow. But I think your point is well taken, is that it would be a concern, I think, fairly for the neighbors. I think, as I've said before in these cases, regardless of what we do, this is going to get appealed to the Board of Supervisors. And the board's going to have to, once again, grapple with the policies that they've adopted and given to us and to the community, and they're going to have to provide, you know, that kind of direction. My recollection from recent appeals is that something not too far from here was denied. But there, as I've said before, when you try to look for a pattern that's consistent among the supervisors and their actions, it's hard for me to decipher it anyway. So,
Mr. Spearman, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I want to go back to my question about the water. I would like to understand that better. Could we have greater explanation in terms of, you know, if we're being told that it's impacting other property, what does that mean? How is that factored into water usage?
And I think with that, if I could also interject and maybe bring Alex into this, because you, the statement was made that the water usage, I think the total usage, which answered the question about both domestic and production, was going to be somewhere around 320,000 odd gallons per year. And the statement was made that a vineyard of similar size would use about 1.25 times as much water. Is that meet with your experience, Alex?
Yeah, no, the common usage that people use in vineyards is 1.25 acre foot per acre.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks for that.
But saying that, you know, their well is 5 gallons a minute. And so there is that concern that it's a very small well, even though that they'd be, you know, they'd be well within the use of that. That well would be running a lot during that course of the year to keep up with that.
It struck me also. What also struck me on that, I just drilled a new domestic well about a year ago. And I spent $25,000 doing it. And this gentleman said he spent $50,000. So that's telling me that he's got an awful deep well if he spent $50,000 to drill it. So again, it gets back to the quote, kind of lack of water availability in the area.
I think this is something we struggle with. You know, we have, you know, certainly concerns of a homeowner that has spent money on a well, but that's anecdotal evidence and not necessarily, you know, a direct cause and effect of water being drawn from adjacent properties. You know, and I don't know the geology out there. I know enough about geology to know that a very, very relatively close distance, you can have different strata and aquifers that can vastly affect the production of wells. But, you know, nobody here is an expert on that. And also back to the odor mitigation thing. I'm sorry, before I go on, were you done, Michael, with your comments? And Alex, do you have anything further?
I'd certainly be interested in your comments, Chairman Henry.
Yeah, nice.
Okay, very good. I think just going back to the whole Taking this at the highest level, I'm with the rest of the commission in struggling with the framework within which we need to operate, which is, you know, the ordinances and having a project that would appear to be, you know, broadly compliant is conditioned to meet the fit. We had a similar project, as I recall, if my memory serves me correct, on Ryan Road, which is also within the CAB footprint, as it were. That project was very different because it was very close to actual neighboring residences, and the topology was very different. We had an adjacent vineyard. There was a big discussion about terpenes and pesticide cross-contamination, if the commission recalls that particular thing. And that was a project that, if my memory serves me correct, did get appealed to the board and was subsequently approved. So I think, as Commissioner Moltari points out, it's not this commission's job to try to second guess what may be appealed or what the Board of Supervisors might ultimately overrule or deny. But, you know, I think we need to do two things. I think, to Commissioner Spearman's point, I think property owners have a right, and there's ordinances that show how land should be used. And if those concerns are addressed and the rules are followed and concerns are mitigated and that kind of thing, then you know, from a philosophical point of view, the variance grading on slopes over 30%, you know, that's in the ordinance, but variances can be allowed, and we did that earlier today. But then the concerns that both Commissioner Campbell and Commissioner Moltari have about water usage, and it's a real problem. So do we continue to either accept or deny these projects on the merits? I think that's what we've done in the past, overruling the ordinance, saying, hey, you know, this is not within the amenity of the community. So that's the one level. The other level, as we've already pointed out, this is something I believe this commission can do in the upcoming workshops in this year to really drive home some clarity and some suggestions on how to change the ordinances so that everybody's playing for the same hymn sheet. We don't have all these variables and intangibles that we really can't grasp onto. Odor is probably the biggest thing after water. I'm not concerned about viewshed in this particular instance because the proposed cultivation areas are actually down in a bit of a bowl. And so although you can see adjoining properties from there, you can't see any structures or any people's dwellings or that kind of thing from the grow areas or proposed grow areas from my collection wandering around the site perimeter. But the odor is another thing. Back earlier when we were moving from the temporary to the permanent ordinances, my wife and I took a trip down to Carpinteria in Santa Barbara County because they were going through this as all this stuff was hitting the Board of Supervisors in the late 19 and early 20. And at one particular point, grows that were within greenhouses or hoop houses, we were able to smell not only the skunk but also the deodorizers and masking agents, you know, as the crow flies over 4,000 feet away. So the odor mitigation is an issue. It's dependent upon the topology. It's dependent upon the wind. And, you know, ultimately, I think I agree with Commissioner Campbell that the only permanent solution is in contained facilities. So how do we get there? So having said all that, I guess any further thoughts on my thoughts?
You know, we can go back years and years ago when this came to the commission and we suggested to the board that maybe we should, in our county, not have outdoor grows because the odor mitigation was not there yet. And that it could only be indoors. And the Board of Supervisors said, no, you know, we're going to allow outdoor grows under these circumstances within these parameters. And I think this applicant has reasonably complied with that. And that doesn't mean that it's just a template that gets set down on top of the project. There are elements of judgment. Otherwise, it wouldn't be coming to us. So I think the question really is for us, one, is the neighborhood issues significant enough to deny the project. And among those is the odor, water, and security issues seem to be primarily the most compelling to me, at least. It's really on the fence. I think of compared to some of the other projects that we've looked at, this is one that is much closer to warranting approval than some of the others that we've dealt with.
Daniela, I see you have your hand up, but before I recognize you, let me ask a question of the commission in a slightly different way, and take this with a bit of a grain of the salt. We know that residents have made comments that during past grows before the permanent ordinance came in, that they were able to smell skunk and the odor at times was overwhelming. Also, Commissioner Campbell's comments on similar projects in his area. Would the commission be doing the applicant a favor by denying so that they're not approved, build this project out, and then subsequently get shut down by code enforcement for odor violations? I mean, it's just a philosophical question. Is that really our role?
I think it's, regardless of what we do, it's going to go to the board, and the board's going to make their call, and then the applicant can respond to that at that time. So this is a tough call. I think maybe I see Ms. Kirk or Ms. Jones has her hand up.
Yeah, before I call on you, JB, Daniela, did you have a comment? Your hand is up.
Yes, thank you, Chair Henry. I would like to advise the commission that we have a request to speak from Thomas Edel, and I don't know if he had trouble connecting or missed public comment. It is up to the chair's prerogative if you would like to reopen public comment. So I would just.
Well, I would defer to Don. Do you have what would you have done in these like instances when public comment has been closed?
I think under the circumstances that we are now, I had that occur probably 3 or 4 times, and every one of them had a good excuse. It had to do with the lack of expertise or whatever on this situation that we're in, so I allowed it.
Okay. Well, with the commission's indulgence, yes, please, Daniela, go ahead and give the member of the public the opportunity to speak.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Campbell, and I apologize for the interruption. The request to speak is from Thomas Edel. Mr. Edel, you'll receive a message from Zoom that the host is attempting to unmute your connection. Your line hasn't been unmuted, and your comments are limited to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. I apologize that I was not on earlier, but I had originally logged into the other viewing website, which was not Zoom. I apologize for that. I am a member of the Crescent Advisory Body, and as I watch this, I'm very disappointed at the lightheartedness of what you call public comments has been mentioned, especially by the planning office. As you may have remembered, the Crescent Advisory Body looked at this project with very careful review, and we had an extremely large public opportunity for the public to come and speak on it at the Crescent Community Church. And there was overwhelmingly large numbers of people, standing room only, and there was very strong opposition to that, which resulted in the Crescent Advisory Body voting to deny it. And so the way I see a Crescent Advisory Body member and a San Luis Obispo Planning Commission member, they are representatives of the people of the county. And this community has spoke very loudly and very clearly that we oppose this project. And I don't know how, if you're a representative of the people of Creston and the rest of the county, how you would vote in favor of one single person who doesn't even want to live on the property, and which is a very telling thing. Most of these people just want to grow it there, but they don't want to be inconvenienced by all the odors and things, and they live elsewhere. The people do not want this in Creston. Please recognize that, and please reflect that as representatives. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Edel. Chair, again, that concludes the request to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniela. Ms. Kirk, your hand up. You had some comments or?
Yeah, and thank you. I don't like to normally interject into your deliberations because I respect your opportunity to discuss amongst yourself. But you know, I heard that the statement, would we be doing a favor for the applicant by denying the application? And I want to reinforce that, you know, we've been in the application process since 2018. And we've gone through several iterations of the project, and we've brought forward a project that's been fully vetted by the planning department and in compliance with the land use ordinances that we have on the books today. And it's a challenge if we have especially as it goes for the outdoor cultivation, the board has developed the ordinance and has been back to the board several times for what is the required setback for outdoor cultivation. And it was contemplated to be 1,000 feet or not allow outdoor at all. And it's, you know, the board made the decision again in August of 2020 to maintain the ability to do outdoor grows or outdoor cultivation with a 300-foot setback. And they also reinforced that these rural properties, it's in the context of our county, it's a larger rural property. It's 88 acres. And these are the properties in which at least the current ordinance, as it's been looked at through the three phase, I think we've almost had four phases of iterations of where cannabis projects are to be located. So our challenge with an applicant who's been going through the process and reducing the project in response to the comments from the advisory group. I was at the advisory group meeting and there were comments and there were concerns about water use and year-round operations and the greenhouses and all those things is that we listened and we amended the project, even though we knew because Creston has taken a pretty solid stance that they want to be a cannabis-free zone, I believe is how they articulated it at a previous hearing. You know, we heard that, but we also, you know, we had a project and we reduced it and we reduced it to elements that we felt responded to their comments. And with the outdoor cultivation, you know, that's a risk that the owner is going to take. The good thing about the outdoor cultivation is if there is a violation, different than an indoor cultivation where you're expending a lot of money on infrastructure for the greenhouses is you don't, we do have some improvement requirements for the outdoor cultivation, but it's not as significant as if we were doing the year round operation. So there's an understanding of risk. There's an understanding of the conditions that are applied in the quarterly monitoring. And we would just really ask the commission that, you know, we look at this with, are we meeting the ordinance requirements? Have we amended our project to meet the ordinance requirements? And is this consistent with the ordinance that's been vetted and adopted several times by our Board of Supervisors? So thank you for letting me jump in there. And again, available for questions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Don, I see you have your hand up.
Yes. And I appreciate what she just said. However, things are moving at a very, very rapid rate. Decisions were made by the board, and we keep in mind, Board of Supervisors, and keeping in mind they don't change them every month just because somebody wants them. But still, 119, one from 19 is a long ways from what's happening now. In 19, we didn't get that terrible many outside grows coming across. Now there's a stack a mile high, I understand, at the planning department. And it's getting to the point in just a short period of time that it's not looking good. I also want to explain that I had a conversation about this with one of our planning staff. And I said, we must explore this PROMATIC EIR that exempts the cannabis industry from CEQA environmental studies. And his answer to me is that they are working on that right now, and it may become a reality that it will go through a secret study in the future. So I think things are happening awfully fast with the number of applications, and so I'm going to have to dismiss some of her comments based on that. They're coming out of the woodwork, and people are getting upset.
Thank you, Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Well, I knew I was going to get slapped for my slightly out of the box comment regarding the reasons for denial. But having said that, I'll take that one for the team. I think, and also we've heard from a member of CAB, and you know, a community can be stalwartly against something, but the correct way to address that, I believe, is by reaching out to the Board of Supervisors and the people that actually make the rules and the ordinances and drive the change that way. As several of us have said, we're presented with a fait accompli in terms of what the framework is for approval. So I've run out of Christina.
I think I want to acknowledge what the public comment has been, and I don't want people to think that we're not listening. But what we're struggling with is following the Board of Supervisors' direction, and that applicant reviewed that direction and met those conditions. And then, you know, an advisory commission and the public have stated that that's not something, they don't agree with the supervisor's direction, is how I'm wrapping it up in my mind. And so, you know, maybe this is my military background, maybe this is my policy background, but I'm hearing the public, but I feel like they need to take that up to the supervisors. Maybe we need to look at this and take this up to the supervisors. But right now, as it resides, direction was given by the supervisors, the applicant followed the direction. And, you know, that's, and yet in the back of my head, I'm saying, well, yeah, but, you know, Planning Commission, you're supposed to put your thoughts on it as well, right? Have what you think is right. And so does it impact the community in a way that in any way can hurt them, right? Like change where they live. I don't know. I don't feel like I have enough data on the water. You know, I don't feel like I've got enough facts. I don't know. I don't know. Sorry.
I think we're all more or less in the same boat.
This is difficult. Going back to a point that Commissioner Campbell made earlier in terms of the way that EIRs are handled, I think I've said in previous, certainly last year, that we're looking at, well, mitigated negative you know, impact, all this kind of thing. And you look at all these little minor, this isn't a big deal, this isn't a big deal. You start stacking them up, and on aggregate, they become a big deal. And so I take your point, Don, about having a more rigid process. We're not there yet. And I think it is interesting to look at what Santa Barbara County is doing. So I think it comes back to this commission. I would couch this in two ways in terms of us taking action. Number one, you know, the view of the ordinance as it stands and the guidelines and the framework within which we're operating. And yes, we have, you know, we have the prerogative. That's why things come to this commission, because things like this are difficult in this particular case. It's not all just rubber stamped. Otherwise, it would be handled at a hearing level. And then the second thing, the project as presented, is it sufficiently conditioned to look at monitoring and ensuring the water usage in terms of all the other parameters for the minimal impact on the environment and everything else that's commissioned, are those sufficient to be able to approve the project and then leave it to subsequent monitoring and code enforcement to address violations or things like, for example, excess water use? Do we see that in the staff report, and do we see that in the actual application? And I think with those questions, I wonder if it's possible to move forward to some kind of a decision or motion.
You know, if I could just make a comment on that, I think one of the problems I have is the whole idea of how do you really monitor the smell? I mean, we keep going round and round about it. You know, with the noise ordinance, you know, if we're playing music and you can, you know, it's above 65 decibels at the property line, you can measure that. It's something that you can basically say, okay, you're in violation. With the smell, there's no way. It's, you know, 6 to 8 weeks is a long time if you have that skunky smell and you're the neighbor having to deal with it. You know, it maybe once a year, but it's still a big issue. And the whole idea is that, you know, if we deny it, we're sending a message to the board, I feel, because I think there are a lot of things that the board has to clarify on this ordinance, because I have a real problem. I mean, there are a lot of things that we cannot. You know, there's conditions, but there's how do you measure those conditions when there's no feasible way for us to go out and say, oh, you're right, it does smell. Maybe it doesn't smell. Some people are going to be more sensitive. And so I think our message by denying is a message to the board that you got to go back and work on this, because this is not fair to us as planning commissioners to have to sort through these issues that I don't think they've thought about enough. And so for me, I personally can't put this burden on the neighbors when I don't think the Board of Supervisors has done their job well enough on this cannabis ordinance. I think we really have to kind of dig a little deeper.
Michael, you had your hand up briefly.
I think Don would like to speak first.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Oh, I was just going to say one other aspect, and I keep bringing this up because maybe it'll happen to us, but this grand jury report on Santa Barbara County. And, you know, they've been ahead of us 3 or 4 years on pretty much the whole wine industry as far as, you know, visitation and that type of thing, the tourist industry. And they're just sorry about an awful lot of things. And one of them that they talked about was, and we just the ones that we've had, you could start counting in your fingers, you know, Penman Springs Road, on and on, 20 acres here, people around. They're starting to infringe on the wineries themselves. So what's that going to do to the tourist industry if you want to go to somebody's winery out by Creston and have to have this smell coming from the... So there's a little bouncing back and forth here also that I didn't mention earlier. And I think that should be taken into consideration also as wineries develop and these groves develop or want to develop.
Yeah, thank you. And to Commissioner O'Connor's comment, absolutely, in the past, I've made the point that, you know, one person's, you know, stench is somebody else's perfume. You know, odor is a very subjective thing, and there are no technical means. And we've made comments about, you know, having something like a sniffle meter that actually works. So there we are. So...
Just Michael, a couple of
go ahead, Michael.
Sidebar comments, really. Too one, I'd be cautious about using Santa Barbara as the Santa Barbara County's experience as analogous to us, because Santa Barbara allowed extensive and very large grows and large numbers of those grows. We're talking about an acre here, 1 acre of cannabis, and I respect Don's point, and I think it's valid, but I think once we get into it, there's a lot of differences between the Santa Barbara experience and what we're dealing with here. That doesn't mean that there's not issues, but there's a scale difference that's pretty significant. To Christina's point about, you know, what is the role of the advisory committee and the public, and, you know, where is discretion applied versus the strict application of the rules. When there's an element in these things that does require some judgment about compatibility and, you know, what's that? That's when they elevate it to people like us to try to figure out what does that mean? And that's the judgment we're supposed to try to make. And it's not easy in cases like this. And it's not comfortable because, people are going to be unhappy, and it's not just with cannabis. We've seen that in other cases too. So, you know, with that, I don't know, Don, this is your district. Do you want to try a motion and see where it goes?
As you probably gathered, my motion would be to deny this.
I'm sure that it would be. So
there's my motion.
I'll second.
And I think that we should probably take a straw vote because there would need to be findings if this is the majority opinion, and we probably need to take a timeout while staff works up the findings.
Chair Henry, you're muted. I apologize.
Don't apologize. Yes, I was just going to ask what we would need to include in terms of findings to be able to, on the grounds of denial. So let's do two things. First of all, I do see we're coming up on the noon hour. So it may be that we want to continue this after lunch. So think about that. But do we need any further discussion before a straw vote? But I would look to doing that.
So, Don, what would be the specific things that you'd cite to recommend denial?
No harm in doing it, but you kind of threw this at me. I am in the same district. had it been a vote to a motion to approve, then all I would have had to do is say. basic the odor. I mean, we're fighting this terribly where I live, and it's not funny. Okay. The town of Templeton is fighting it, and it's way beyond 1,000 feet. It's way beyond 300 feet. I told you about our Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. People I haven't seen for years coming up and saying that. So something's got to happen.
So fundamentally, the reason for denial would be that there's not an adequate way to measure and mitigate the odor impacts on the neighbors in the community.
Now, give that some further value in my mind, in that, as you remember, Michael, we had several sessions of the Planning Commission years back where we had an expert. In fact, he had developed some of the systems for buildings, including a carbon scrubber, that took care of that problem. But we had other speakers in another meeting, and they never did come up with any succinct answer to the smell except spewing perfume out. So you'd smell perfume. I said, Chad, you smell perfume rather than this other stuff. That never came to fruition, of course. But that's about the only, 3 or 4 years ago in our Planning Commission meetings, that's about the only thing that they did come up with after some real interesting sessions by experts trying to get rid of the smell, and it didn't work.
So
long one story, other question. Anyway.
So Phil, if I I just want to make sure I understood that comment. So basically we're saying that the mitigation measures that were put in place for the odor, which comply with what they're supposed to do, are not measurable. And therefore, that's a reason for denial, because there's not a measurement. But is in the ordinance, does it require the measurement on the mitigation measure? So I'm trying to just, make sure that we have the facts aligned for reasons if we deny. So is that what we're saying? That
we haven't voted on it. So one thing, Christina, just sometimes when I'm trying to help somebody formulate their position so that we can proceed does not mean that I'm necessarily promoting that position.
I understand. I'm just trying to clarify what that reason would be, because I want to make sure that reason, I know that there are odors, there are requirements, there are conditions, mitigation measures for odor. The applicant has met those. But we're saying that we're concerned. What I'm hearing is the concern arises because that odor can't be measured. And then we don't know when a violation may occur. Is that what I'm hearing?
In this particular case, the applicant is stating that they are taking care of the odor problem by distancing. But what they're not remembering is God gives us wind once in a while, and that's what spreads it. So he can say, you can stand at their fence line one day when it's perfectly calm and maybe not smell anything. But when Papa gets home from work next door and the wind comes up, he's got to live with it. But it's a tough one. It is. And that's why I brought up this earlier when we had it in Planning Commission experts, and they couldn't come up with a reason either. And the more these we approve, the more it's going to be a problem, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Just before we go on, we are coming up on 12. I would ask if the commission would like to. So we have two possibilities, and the staff will have to come up with some words if the straw vote indicates one way. And I would ask staff how long that might take, depending upon what the commission comes up with respect to the reasons for denial, if that's where we're going. And are we okay continuing past lunch, or do we want to recess and come back after lunch?
So I move that we continue past lunch because I think we're getting pretty close to the end of this.
Okay, very good. And then before I go back to the
we
have a second on the motion past 12, please.
Second.
Alex.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. Now,
thank you. Now, sorry, I cut across you. Christina, please continue.
Okay. So I'm just, how do you require a measurement that isn't in the ordinance? And I guess I'm trying to understand, you know, how do you say to an applicant, we're denying this because you didn't do something we didn't require you to do. That's what I'm trying to get through my head. And I'm trying to look at this from very, you know, just fair perspective in terms of this is what we told you to do. This is what supervisors told you to do. You did it. But then now we're looking at it. We're putting in the comments of the public, their concerns, but maybe some of our own concerns, right? And then putting in a metric, which I don't disagree with the metric, Alex, but I'm just saying, where was that in terms of the requirements when they did the application? That's all. I'm trying to figure this out.
So I have two thoughts. First of all, looking back to previous projects like this, the commission is denied. Again, I believe the Ryan Road was denied on exactly the same issue of odor, uncontained outdoor grow, lack of ability to sufficiently mitigate in the adjacency, even though it met the letter of the law in terms of the setbacks and the distancing and that kind of thing. And yet on that occasion, this commission did deny. I'm not saying that sets a precedent, but it's something to think back on. The other thing, in terms of looking at language for denial, if that's where we're going, is there anything we can articulate around the water use and the anecdotal comments from adjacent property owners? Alex, I don't know if you have a thought on that.
Yeah, no. Personally, I think the water is, you know, for me, it's a tertiary issue. If you're looking at under an acre foot, if you put a residence in there, you had four people living in a house, you're probably going to be pushing up to that level regardless. So for me, the water is not the issue. For me, it really comes down to neighborhood compatibility. It's the smell. And it's also safety concerns. I mean, we basically went through what some of the safety concerns were. You're in a neighborhood, in a rural neighborhood, where you really do count on your neighbors because you know, 15 minutes is a long time if something serious happens and somebody trespasses on your property. And so it really becomes that neighborhood compatibility. The neighbors aren't supportive of it. So that's really the direction that I would go. The Ryan Road property was a little bit different for me. The smell was an issue, but it's also because I don't think we have enough research on the terpene drift and how it would affect the quality of the grapes. And economically, it could affect a vineyard because you could lose a contract because a winemaker would say, I don't want to buy those grapes because I don't know what it's going to taste like when I get it into a bottle. And so there's a little bit of a difference between this project and that project for me. For me, it just comes down to the neighborhood compatibility on this one.
And I think going back to the point about the water, if this were some large vineyard that was coming before us for whatever reason, well, water is water. You know, we would take that on its merits, I think. So, okay. So, Don, okay, at this stage, Don, did you want to go with these two points that about neighborhood compatibility and certainly the security issue is one, as potential language for reasons for denial?
and odor. So odor
and odor as well.
Yeah. So why don't we see if there's three votes to support that, and then the details of the language could be worked out.
Okay. So I think with that, then how do I conduct a straw vote? What do we do? Is this a raise of hands?
I'm not sure if there's a method for that. Do you
protocol here or not, Phil?
But just Brian Sackwood, County Council's office. I would just frame it as a tentative motion and just take a formal roll call vote. But again, it's a tentative and not the final action. Then staff would, if it is approved or passes, then staff can take the initial direction, prepare some draft language, and come back for final deliberation and consideration.
Okay.
Thank you, Brian. Do you want to make a stab at it, Don?
Well, I think we've got the...
I made the motion and the second by Alex.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a tentative motion in front of the board to deny the application.
And a second.
And a second. From Commissioner Vilcana. Madam Clerk, could you please...
Oh, there's comments on the motion. And I just...
Ooh. Sorry.
I guess we're allowed to do that. Respectfully, I'm going to vote against this motion because I do think that in this case, there's strong enough compliance to warrant approval in this case. So I'm just telling people up front, that's where I'm going to be coming from.
Okay. So any other further discussion before we take the tentative motion vote?
You only got two people left. You want to just voice your opinion like Michael did? We'll get on to lunch.
Well, Christina, go ahead.
Oh, after you, Phil. Really, after.
I think that there are sufficient grounds to deny. I do think the neighborhood compatibility, and we had one other, I can't remember where it was. It was up north of Nacimiento, and it was a beautiful area and certainly had sufficient cause to deny out there. Incompatibility with the neighbors in neighborhood. I think security is an issue. It's unmanned. I did take Detective Hernandez's point about, well, we're talking about property and not people at risk, but you know, clearly adjacent homeowners have said, hey, you know, we've got these undesirables that are trooping across, trespassing, trying to get himself a little weed out there. And that's of concern and extended response time, even with a rural deputy, you know, 15 minutes is a long time. So, I think in this case, I would vote to deny. So it leaves it to you, Christina.
Well, there's a majority to deny then.
Majority is to deny.
So. I still want to hear what Christina has to say.
All right. Quickly, because I know you want a break for lunch. I think what I'm thinking about is what produces the change, right? So I think about, the Board of Supervisors provided one set of direction. We're hearing, legitimate concerns about that direction. So how does the message best be heard for change? So is that to deny or follow? Is it to follow the direction of the supervisors or deny because the direction of the supervisors does not fit the situation? That's where I'm at. And I think like my moral compass always says, follow the letter of the law type of thing. But my community feeling is that I would oddly probably deny it simply to make the statement to amplify these concerns that we have on the cannabis direction from the supervisors.
I get a check here also that, and I get this from my supervisor. As I stated earlier, that came down a year or so ago, and now we're here. But they look to us as a guiding light, too, to change things and make new ordinances and update things on that basis. So
we're kind of talking like that supervisor is a law, the United States law that has to be followed or something, but they're looking for us to change things also, and I think we're doing it right now, as a matter of fact. They've got to pay some attention to this. It's just getting out of control. People driving around smelling this stuff, they got to come up with an answer for it. So maybe this will push them into doing it.
I think I'm on the same page with all that. And to Commissioner Spearman's point is that, you know, driving, you know, with, I always had a number one rule in my career was, you know, complain about anything you want, but don't just bring me the complaint. Bring me some suggestions on how to fix it. And I think that's where this commission should stand now. We're already moving in that direction with our workshops. I think we can take topics like this and come up with some viable and useful suggestions to drive the change. And along with that, the community. You know, clearly the community has very strong feelings about this. So I think to answer your question, Christina, you along with that, it comes the obligation or responsibility to say, here's what we're struggling with. Here's what the inconsistencies are. Here's where we can't deal with empirical data to make proper decisions. And this is how we fix it. So that's step two after this hearing.
Keep in mind also that, and I have voted yes every time, we have voted many times to allow this type of work in an industrial commercial area. And we just had one a couple through times ago. So it's not that we are just denying it because we're going to deny it. We think that's the direction it's going to need to go if people keep smelling this thing and they can't stop it.
Okay. I think we have enough consensus here and direction for staff. Eric, or would it be yourself or County Council? I think what we're hearing, if I know you've been taking furious notes,
Mr. Chairman, if we have a majority to deny, then the motion would pass. We don't need to.
We need to articulate grounds to for denial. I think staff would have to come up with some language. Is that correct, Eric?
Can we take a vote to the tentative motion?
Okay. Why don't we formally take the vote?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, please, Madam Clerk.
Okay. Commissioner Campbell?
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I'm going to vote. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Commissioner Villicana?
Yes.
Commissioner Simpson-Spearman?
Yes.
Commissioner Moultrie?
No.
And Chairman Henry?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so our straw vote points to that. So what we're looking for is language that would articulate reasons for denial based around neighborhood compatibility, lack of effective means for odor control, and the security concerns because of long first responder times, I think is the crux of what I'm getting, Mr. Hughes.
Nobody living on the property.
Right.
Chair Henry, as far as odors, you know, I think we have good direction there on the security aspect. I did want to clarify that the kind of the underlying reasons for denial are the long response time and that there are no persons residing on site. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the neighborhood compatibility, I think we addresses is a broader concern. How much time? My proposal would be we take a short recess while the language is being drafted. The question is, we do long enough to take a lunch break or just enough time to do the work and come back?
How much time do you need, Eric?
Typically, I would ask for about 30 minutes. It could take a little bit longer, but I think 30 minutes should be sufficient.
How about if we come back at 12:45?
Is that okay with the commission? Is it good enough time to eat? We can eat during the break, or do we continue at 1?
12:45 is fine.
Okay, very
good. For me.
Okay, very good. So we'll call a recess while staff comes up with the language, and we'll reconvene at 12:45. Thank you very much.
Ramona?
Recording stopped.
Ramona?
She's listening. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to sign off and sign back on my internet.
Recording in progress.
There's Commissioner Vilcon is back. I see that we're all back from the break. Thank you for that. Has staff had time to come up with the proposed language for the item?
Chairman Henry Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. Yes, I will go ahead and share my screen.
And Mr. Hughes, before you do, Chair Henry, I don't know if you want to recognize Commissioner Campbell. He has his hand raised.
Oh, excuse me, Don. Please go ahead. If you have a comment, you're muted right now, though. Okay, so you were muted. I didn't hear that.
I think he was saying the hand was inadvertent.
Oh.
Doing everything under the sun. No. Yeah.
Okay, so you had no comment?
There we go.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Go ahead, Eric.
All right. Thank you, Chairman Henry. Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Excellent. So before you today, we have Exhibit A, findings for conditional use permit DRC 2018-00234, Bigfoot Valley, LLC. The first is just the environmental determination that this is statutorily exempt from CEQA, as CEQA does not apply to projects which a public agency rejects or disapproves. The second finding B, for this conditional use permit states the establishment and subsequent operation or conduct of outdoor cultivation may, because of the circumstances and conditions applied in the particular case, be detrimental to the health, safety, or welfare of the general public or persons residing or working in the neighborhood of the use, or be detrimental or injurious to property or improvements in the vicinity of the use because, number A, to reflect the odors. The project proposes outdoor cannabis cultivation for which the applicant has not demonstrated effective methods to ensure off-site nuisance odors could be sufficiently and adequately mitigated. The only proposed odor control between the proposed use and the surrounding properties are setbacks. However, the applicant has not demonstrated that the setbacks are sufficient to adequately mitigate off-site nuisance odors for this project site. And then B, the project raises neighborhood security concerns related to law enforcement response times and the adequacy of on-site security measures. Any questions before I move on from those?
Should you add in something to the effect that there's nobody 24/7 on the property or nobody living on the property? Would that help enhance B a little bit?
So, Commissioner Campbell, and I don't know if the sheriff or council wants to step in, but the as part of the sheriff's review and their background, their investigation on with the security plan, we do have applicants that have been approved where they do not live on site, and so I think ultimately this condition reflects that. And if if asked as to some more clarification, that as noted on the record here today, that the the fact that nobody's going to reside on site is kind of encompassed in this language here.
Okay, no problem.
All right. And then number C just states the proposed cannabis activities may be inconsistent with the character of the immediate neighborhood or contrary to its orderly development because, and then A and B just reflect the statements made above. So I could read them off, but the wording here is the same. And that does it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hughes. Any comments from the commission on this language or the proposed motion? I see Commissioner Spearman, I see your hand is raised.
Thanks. Thanks, Chair Henry. So, Eric, can you just explain a little bit? The applicant has not demonstrated that the setbacks are sufficient to adequately mitigate off-site nuisance odors for the project site. Based on what? I mean, based on the current ordinance they have, right?
So what's your finding for that statement?
So Commissioner Spearman, these findings are, you know, we're prepared at the directive of your commission. You know, and so the setbacks alone, again, there's nothing demonstrating that those will control odors. And so, again, per your commission, this is the final.
Well, then I think the point I'm trying to make, Eric, is I think that the applicant has demonstrated that they put setbacks in place. We're saying that the ability to measure the odor is not there, right?
And just Brian Stack here with County Council's office. I think part of the reason behind the language and the way it's phrased is setbacks and no nuisance odors are two separate requirements that may overlap with their intent or the goals they hopefully achieve. But they comply with the minimum setbacks. But I think the understanding or the way it was interpreted by staff was that they haven't demonstrated that there won't be nuisance odors, including because if you're only relying on setbacks, we don't think that's sufficient, or you haven't demonstrated that alone will be sufficient to check the box for no nuisance offsite odors, if that makes sense.
I wonder then, and again, so that last part of that bullet A, where it says the applicant, would it make sense to change that language? It says the commission has not found that the setbacks are sufficient. To Christina's point that, you know, the applicant is in compliance with the ordinance, but the commission has not found that these are sufficient. Is that what we're really trying to say?
Does it just say something to the fact that the setbacks alone are sufficient to adequately mitigate the offsite nuisance odors?
I think we're struggling with this, and I look to council for help. Is that I think to Commissioner Spearman's point is that the applicant in their application and with the conditions and all that have done what they need to do and are compliant with the ordinance. But the commission is not finding that these are sufficient. I don't believe making the applicant responsible for proving something that's not provable, because we don't have technical means to measure and control that.
I think, again, I would fall, Brian Stack here with County Council's office, fall back to the premise of my recent comment was that this is an ordinance consistency question in some respects, and there's two things they need to be consistent with. They are consistent with the setback, but what I'm hearing from the commission is that you don't think they're consistent with the requirement that there won't be nuisance offsite odors. And the burden ultimately is on the applicant to demonstrate that they need to demonstrate they're going to be compliant with the ordinance. And if that's a concern that the commission has that this project might not, you will approve it. And yeah, it's an ordinance requirement, but they get up and running and they might go and violate the ordinance. And that's what you're concerned about, is not having a violation. And so I think putting the onus on the applicant to demonstrate how they won't violate the ordinance, I think, is certainly legally valid. And again, that provides the opening to the applicant to later provide that analysis if there is an appeal or if they reapply. But it's at the end of the day, it's the requirement to check that second box that, you know, you're not going to have offsite nuisance odors.
Does that help, Christina?
I feel more comfortable if you just inserted the word that Alex recommended.
Would you say that again, Alex?
Right. I was just saying that after the demonstrated that the setbacks setbacks alone are not sufficient to adequately mitigate offsite nuisance odors.
That's getting there. Yeah. Because after all, when you look at this,
there really is nothing they can do with that size property and the proximity of neighbors. There's basically nothing they can do to stop the odor because we got this such thing called wind. And so how do you get, you got to get around that somehow. In other words, if he says we set it back 100 feet and then he comes back to us and says, now we're 200 feet, so we won't have any more odor. That's not right. It's still going to be odorous if the wind blows.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, it almost needs to be enclosed with scrubbers. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, because there's no way just with a setback you can eliminate odor.
Exactly.
So Alex has proposed that after the word setbacks, insert the word alone. So odors, the setbacks alone are sufficient.
I think that's a good thing.
And does county council okay with that that change?
Brian Sackler, county council's office, I have no concern with that addition from a legal perspective. But that matches the commission's intent and concern.
So then I guess we would do the same thing under CA as well, Eric, to make the language consistent. Okay, very good. Any other comments on this? Okay, I guess with that, I will call for a motion.
Well, this is a result of my motion. Do we really? I guess I'll remake it if you'd like me to. I move we deny the project based on the whatever you want to call it that we just did.
Findings.
I'll second that.
Put it okay. In better language.
We have a motion and a second. Mr. Hughes, you have everything you need with regards to this? Yeah, we're good to...
Chairman Henry, I do, and I will stop sharing my screen. Thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you for that. All right, well, before I call for the vote, I would like to just comment and thank the commission. I mean, this is a perfect reason why I love being part of this commission so much, is because we all collaborate. We are really bottoming out the issues. We're identifying things to deal with going forward. So thanks for all your patience and time. If there are no further comments on the motion, I'll call for the vote, Madam Chair. Or sorry, Madam Clerk.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Vilakana?
Yes.
Commissioner Moltari?
No.
Commissioner Simpson-Spearman?
Yes.
And Chairman Henry?
Yes. So the motion is to deny has been approved. And I believe that's our last hearing item. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record. And
so moved.
Second.
Very good.
Approved and second. Madam Clerk.
You can do that in a voice vote if you want.
I think we can just do a voice vote on that one.
We can do a voice vote these last two.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Also, Chairman Henry, if I may, after the hearings motion is over, we also need to advise the applicants about the appeal period and appeal information of projects.
Okay. I don't have any language for that. I think it's a 10-day period to appeal, though. Is that correct?
Correct.
So
it's 14 days.
14? Oh, that was coastal. Okay, 14-day period, yes.
So if anyone is dissatisfied with the approval or denial of any project that was heard at today's meeting, can submit an appeal in writing to the planning department within 14 days from the date of action.
Okay, very good. So that satisfies that requirement then?
Yes.
Okay,
and then,
that's a matter of the record. So then the next is motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting on February 10th, 2022.
Looks like Christina wants to say something before we adjourn.
Oh, do you have your hand up?
That's fine. I just wanted to say thank you to Chair Campbell for the last year and on Zoom, as Mike mentioned in the top of the meeting. But I just wanted to say thank you. Both you and Michael have provided, I know me, a lot of guidance in this process, and I really appreciate that and wanted to thank you for that service.
Well, thank you. Enjoyed doing it.
I will echo those same thoughts. So thank you. Thank you both.
And thanks, Alex.
Sure, like I said, I give us some big boots to fill on that. Thank you, Christina. All right, so I think we're there. Motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting on February 10th, 2022, and looking forward to that workshop.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
None opposed. I call the meeting adjourned. Thank you, staff. Thank you, commissioners.
See you next month.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Phil.